Many of you may have seen the podcast we did with Ghost, the bodybuilder, and how he was a younger of Asian hits. And when he was a young person on the streets of Reading, how he clicked up with some older female gangsters. We've got someone from that group in the house today, Fran. You may also have seen our interview with Tawana about the female prison experience. Fran was also in the same prison as Tawana as well. So a bit of overlap with two of our podcast guests. Mm-hmm. I'll put those stories down there in the description box if you want to check them out. And all of Fran's stuff will be down there, and Jen's stuff will be down there as well. Mm. So huge thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, Ghost has done tremendous, you know. He discovered the bodybuilding and he was just naturally massive, and he got out and he's going all over the world now. But you know him from back when he was a young person.
Yeah, I remember. I can't remember if he got out before I went in. I can't remember how long he's been out now, but I remember seeing a picture of him on my friend's Facebook and saying he was like that. And I was like, wow, he's huge now, he like massive. Yeah, obviously he wasn't like a tiny lad like back in the day, but he was nothing like that. So yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, so how did you meet him?
So I was in the, he mentioned, I've listened to obviously his interview, and he mentioned about some female like drug dealers, and I was one of that group. I was in that group, I think, before he sort of come along. I knew some of the lads that he become friends with and stuff like that. So yeah, so that's how I got to know him.
And you had a story about one of his, was it his co-defendant?
Oh yeah, so yeah, just they were just on another level. it was a crazy world. Like, you know, I sold a lot of drugs, but I wasn't like some of them sort of gangsters, you know. I wasn't like someone that would like sort of go out and stab anyone or anything like that. But I remember one night I was staying at one of us, the group of girls that we were dealing in the flats, and the door was going like bang, like I thought it was the police at first, and I've opened the door and it's like one of these guys, and he's just like, you know, he's not on my level, shall I say. You know, I don't want to say too much obviously, but yeah, he wasn't on my level, and he was like looking for one of my friends, and he wanted to know where she was. And obviously I actually generally didn't know, she was just letting me stay at her flat. And you know, he was sort of like, are you lying to me? And I was like, and you start, and I'm thinking, oh God. And then it's like, you know, and I'm talking to him, trying to calm him down. And, you know, we're having a good sort of chat in the kitchen. And then the next thing, he thinks I've said something, and then he gets mad. And I'm thinking, oh my God, you know, I've known him for a while, we were friends, but it's like, you know, is something going to happen? You know, like, I'm, you know, kind of like, it's like shit. But, yeah, so it was a madness back then. It was a madness. And obviously, yeah, I was around obviously when that happened with them guys, which, you know, was a sad situation.
Because the ghost say like one of the females' houses got robbed. That's kind of like triggered a lot of the drama.
Yeah, that's, luckily I wasn't there when it happened, but that was another girl, because there was about, oh, there's about five of us girls all together. And yeah, if I'm correct in saying, I think her partner had gone to prison, and yeah, there was a lot of money. He, you know, everything he talks is the truth. You know, there was so much money involved. You know, they made me sort of look little. I was just sort of there like, yeah, I'll take a phone, I'll earn money, you know, and stuff like that. And yeah, they did. They all got tied up. My friend, like, well, they were both like close friends of mine, and yeah, it was a massive scary experience for them.
Definitely. How did you hear about it then?
Because my friend, she just rung me, like, obviously when it like I think it was like the next day or whatever, because we did spend most of the time together. It wasn't often we'd go a couple of days without seeing each other, so it was just lucky that I wasn't in that situation.
Did she describe it to you, what happened?
Just that, like, they, I'm sure they tied her up, and I think someone got beaten up quite bad, and obviously I know they got robbed. I don't want to sit here and say stuff that yeah. I think was said, because I'm actually not 100% sure. I was off my box in them days, though, you know. So it's a lot of it is sort of a blur as well. But I do remember like that situation, because I remember thinking, I'm lucky I wasn't there.
Can you remember the story fully?
No, but it's all in the podcast if you want to watch it. How did all this start for you then, Fran? Are you from Reading originally?
Yeah. So I grew up, started in Junction in Reading, and then grew up in Woodley. It was just sort of mad. It kind of like done a 180 really quickly, because I grew up, used to go to Sunday school. You know, my mum went to church at 11. I was like, yeah, I want to be rebaptized, and like got rebaptized, you know, and it was like, and then all of a sudden, you know, I grew up in a massive loving family. Like, my dad's Italian, so they was always round. You know, I was daddy's girl, I was spoiled and stuff like that. And then obviously my parents went through a bit of a rough patch, and, you know, they was going to split up. I think I was about 12 at this point, maybe 13. I definitely wasn't older than 13. So my dad was going to go. Obviously, it really affected me. He see that. So he was like, look, you know, I'm going to stay until you're 16. When you're in a job for 6 months, I'm going back to Italy. So obviously, you know, I'm a kid, but I'm kind of like, it's a lot to take in. So I think I sort of thought I had to grow up quick. And then by 13, I was just like smoking weed and stuff like that. And you know how it goes. You end up just doing it. And then it turns to like speed and ecstasy. But I was always like mature for my age. So I always like knew a lot of older people. And then so obviously it was like, oh, I can get drugs. And then I'd be the one that would get the drugs, and for everyone else, so we could all get high. It was like acid, everything, you know, whatever we could get, we was doing. And this was all like during school times.
I was going to ask, what were you like in your school days? But
yeah. I went, you know, you can't argue with that. But yeah, I think I spent a lot of it off my nut. Wow. So that was that sort of growing up, you know, but I still had, you know, my family, like, you know, it was still good, you know, people have had it a million times worse, but that's where it, you know, the drugs and stuff started taking. And then I learned that I could get my drugs for free. You know, I thought, hang on a minute, I'll put it up a little bit. Why am I doing this for free? Like, you know, so I'd get my drugs free. And then, yeah, my dad stuck to his word, like, I was been like nearly 17. He moved back to Italy and my brother went. I think my dad thought I was going to go, but I was too wrapped up in this world and I was a street kid and I didn't want to go to a little village and live there and not speak no language, not know anyone. So yeah. But then it just really sort of spiraled then. I think I started on crack. This is the mad thing. Some of it is, I don't remember. I don't remember doing it for the first time. With the heroin, I do. But with the crack, I don't remember. But I remember getting to such a low point that it was like I'd been off my nut all night. So I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't. Like, I was terrified of ending up in jail. I was in with some crazy people, like, you know, not, I'm not saying that Ghost was a crazy person, but what I'm saying is, like, you know, it was that era, you know, these men would sort of I'm not saying Ghost, but I'm saying other men would stab people for nothing, you know, it was the environment I was in. And I tried to take my life.
How old were you at that point?
I was about 17, nearly 18.
Oh my goodness. What method of taking your life had you?
I took an overdose, yeah. I took loads and loads and loads of sleeping tablets.
Where were you?
I was in a bedsit in Reading. It's such a stupid story. I don't know if I was hallucinating or not, but I remember lying there and I was thinking, this is the last time I'm going to open my eyes. And as I've opened my eyes, I've just seen these, like, to me at that moment in time, I see ghosts going, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. So it was like, it drew me out of it. And then I called one of these girls that, you know, was in the circle, and literally I remember being stood on the street and I was like, I need help. And I remember hallucinating. I was like, 1 minute I see her and her friend talking to me, and then they wasn't even there. And it was like, it was the most freakiest thing that ever happened to me.
What was the lead up to you wanting to do it?
what to take my life, because yeah. like my dad had gone, I felt like my home, my mum had moved away, I couldn't get off the drugs, and I was getting in debt, and it was uncontrollable, and it was like, you know, I owed money and stuff like that, and it was like, how at that point, like, how do you get out of it? Like, it is, you know, it was tough. It was like in my head, it was my only option to do that. So yeah,
so you're hallucinating.
Yeah, but I'm glad, like, you know, whether it was real or not, you know, I'm a very spiritual person. I do believe in stuff like that, in readings and all that kind of stuff. You know, and I was told that it was spirits, but again, you know, someone might think I'm crazy and I could be, you know, I could be wrong. It could have just been hallucination, but whatever it was, it saved my life.
Yeah. So you were conscious then, you were like in this hallucinatory state and the spirits were telling you
to come out.
No, they were saying, come on. It was like they were saying to me, come with us. But it was like they'd done it to scare me, to bring me round. Because it was like I knew I was going to die. It was like I was like, I said to myself, this is the last time I'm going to open my eyes, because I must have been going like that. Like, it was like, it was, I was going to go. And then as I opened my eyes, it was that, but it scared me. It was like,
it's like they use reverse psychology.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It was like, I don't want to come with you. You're scary. Like, you know, it's like how it's supposed to be. I was supposed to see the light and stuff, you know.
And where was your head at when you came around from that?
So yeah, so I come out of hospital.
How did you end up in hospital then?
So obviously I come out, I rung my friends, like I run out of the bed, sit onto the main busy road. God knows what people must have thought of me. I do remember clippets of that. I really do, because I don't think it will ever go. It was the fact that I think I was seeing my friend and then she wasn't there and it was just madness. But then obviously she did turn up because I rang her and I said, like, I need your help. You know, this is what I've done, sort of thing. And then, yeah, she took me to hospital. Apparently I acted up massively. I wouldn't, you know, I had a bruise from like there to there where I wouldn't let them take my blood and they was fighting me and the nurses and stuff like that. So, yeah.
How long were you in hospital for?
They let me out the next day.
Okay.
Yeah.
They didn't refer you to a counsellor?
No, back in them days, it wasn't. Kick them out. Yeah, it wasn't. They just think it was nothing then, was it? It's like, oh, sort of go away.
Stomach
pump.
No
one cared. I can't remember, if I'm honest. I don't think I did. I don't remember it if they did anyway. But yeah.
Wow.
So you got out. What was your destination?
I went back to... where did I go? I went back to the bedsit. And then my dad... I know my dad come back. So at this point, and he was like, you're not leaving, you're not going anywhere. Like, you're not, like, he wouldn't let me out. And like, for sort of like 6 weeks, I couldn't go anywhere. And then obviously, again, I remember then obviously being allowed to sort of go out and stuff. Like, when my dad said no, it was no. Like, you know, he never had to put his hands on us, but it was no. And I knew it meant no, sort of thing.
Well, I've got to ask, did you feel any side effects for days after? Because when I ended up in hospital over suicide through drugs, I was hallucinating for days after.
Oh wow. No, I remember being sleepy a lot.
Yeah.
I remember like being in bed for a good few days, but I don't know if that was part of the tablets and depression or what. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But I wasn't like hallucinating or anything like that.
No. So you pick yourself back up?
Well, no, not really. When I first got to go straight back out, you know, my group of best friends at the time, I went to one of the houses they were selling from, you know, she's like, come over and see me and stuff. And we all just sat there and talking, and then she's gone, oh, like, you know, have some of that. So at the end of the day, listen, I'm a grown woman, I'm, you know, I can be like no or whatever. So smoked it, didn't even ask at the time what it was. It was disgusting. It's like, it tasted like fish, I don't know. It was vile. It had the horrible smell. But obviously, I've smoked a little bit and I smoked a little bit more, and I was like, oh wow, this is all right. You know, and I'm like, sat in the chair and I'm like, what's that? She's like, heroin. And this is my mate, this is my best mate that's come and got me, knowing that I've not long took an overdose.
What?
Yeah, so, you know, at the end of the day, like, I think I used to blame her, but I don't anymore because I was an adult, you know. I'm not stupid. I've grown up with drugs. That was my choice to do what I'd done that day. And it was my choice not to ask. So, you know, more for me, it was upsetful at some points when I dwelled on it, but there's no point dwelling on it. It's part of my journey. You know, sometimes am I embarrassed to say it? Yeah. But you know what? It's made me who I am today. And yeah, so then I was hooked on heroin. And I was on that for a few years. And then one day I was just like, I was selling it. I was in with all this group. You know, we see some madness. I remember one day I got a phone call and this guy said to me, oh, can you go and drop like an eighth of white off to such and such? So again, this is that group of the circle. I've gone, yeah, like, all right, no worries. So I've gone and done it. And then literally, like, me and my mate, we get a phone call, like, 20 minutes later, and then like, what? And there's like, oh, such and such has just gone and axed, like, such and such in the head because she robbed, like, such and such. And it's just like, oh, my God, like, I've literally just met him. So obviously, matey is who this girl's robbed. He's asked me to give him an eighth to go and do this bird, and the girls answered the door holding her baby thinking, oh, they're not going to do nothing to me. And obviously she was okay, but you know, and it's just like, I gotta get out of this world's mad. I'm gonna end up dead or in jail. And you know, it was like, yeah. So one day I got up and I went to the doctors and I got myself on a four-way contract. Back then, that's what it was called.
What's that?
So you would have a contract between four things. It was me, the doctor, your methadone script, and a counsellor. So you'd have to abide by all of them. So you'd have to see the doctor, you'd have to see the counsellor. If you did miss your appointments with the counsellor, your methadone would get stopped. And I'd done it. And I think I smoked it once. I had half a joint once from going on the methadone, but I liked it. It gave me a high. Like, I don't understand why people wouldn't just get on the meth and either stay on the meth or you know, just get off it. Like, yeah. And I remember, like, I moved from, like, Reading just to Wokingham. Like, it wasn't far, but I knew I kind of had to get out of that circle of people. And yeah, I ended up weaning myself off of it. I remember, I think my doctor thought I was on like 12 mils, and I used to use this little syringe and I put like 6 mils in it. And then I just like, yeah, I come off it and I never, ever, ever went back. Like, well, never.
So when was your first brushing with the law?
Oh God, I must have been like 13.
What was that for?
Shoplifting, you know, the usual kiddie thing. And then it was around 17 for, driving without a license and insurance. That was a massive thing. I was always getting like arrested for that. That was my first jail sentence I got for that.
How long did you get for that?
So I got done for driving whilst disqualified. And then I got caught again whilst on a ban, and I had I got community service and a ban for the first time. And then I got caught again whilst on a ban, and like missing some community service. So the judge didn't like me. The judge did straight away. She says to me, like, by rights, I have to give you a pre-sentence report. She goes, but you will be going to jail. So I was like, great. But this was a little bit later on. This was like when I hit about 25, I think I was, something like that. And so then I ended up going back. From being arrested to going back to court, my best friend had died. And it was a massive thing. And you know, I blame myself a lot for that night. So when I went for my pre-sentence report, the officers that sat there saying to me, you know, the probation, she's like, oh, you know, do you think it's right what you've done? I was like, oh, what? So insurance and a license is going to bring someone back. Like, if I kill them, is it? No, it's not going to make a difference. She was fuming with me, but then I broke. And then obviously I said, like, my friend had been run over, you know, and she would like wrote me the best pre-sentence report and said, like, you cannot send this girl to jail over the most silliest offenses. Like, yes, she's done it, but you know, this girl needs help. and the judge didn't, like, she didn't care. She sentenced me to a month for missing community service and 3 months for the driving on a ban again. So I got 4 months, but my solicitor appealed against sentencing, so I got out after 11 days.
Wow.
So I was lucky, yeah.
So can we go back to your friend's death? Are you comfortable chatting about that one in detail?
Yeah, no, I've done a lot of work on that now, so, yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to just...
So, I remember I was doing mechanics at college, and she was the one that used to always say to me, you know, like, you need to stick at the college course, like, do the mechanics, I'll do the car spray, and we can open a garage. That was, like, our little dream. And I remember one day, I was in the library because I had to get my assignments in. So I'd gone into a library and she was ringing and ringing and ringing me. Obviously, I wasn't answering the phone. I was in the library. And then later on, I'd come out and then my mate picked me up. I had to go and sell all my drugs. You know, the phone was going mad. I needed to be everywhere. And she rang my mate's phone and I spoke to her. She's like, Fran, you know, like, I really need to talk to you. And I was like, yeah, well, we'll meet up tonight. She was like, I really do need to talk to you though. And I was like, yeah, no, it's fine. Like, we'll meet up and we'll go for a drink or something. I'll meet you later on in the pub. And yeah, so then I went to this other girl's house to print off all of this work that I'd done or finish it off. And then I don't know what I thought. I never ever used to sniff without drinking because it makes me paranoid. But I sniffed the line. I thought I'd do a couple of lines just to keep me awake. I need to go and meet Hayley. You know, it's pushing on for like 10, half 10 at night. There was this little club in Wokingham that used to be open till late. And we've left there and I've like said to my best mate, I was like, we had like a few ounces of Coke scales like stuck in the roof of my convertible. and I said to my mate, like, you're going to have to drive. Like, I need to go home. Like, I'm paranoid. I'm off my face. And yeah, like she was ringing and ringing me and I said to my mate, she'd be all right, wouldn't she? Like, she'd be all right. Like, and the next thing you know, I got a text saying like, Fran, I'm walking home on my own, mate. Like, please come and get me. And then literally from that text, 10 minutes later, she got run over and killed. So it was just like, yeah, it was a lot. It was.
Do you know if the driver was under the influence?
No, he was just some young little geeky kid, bless him. He wasn't speeding. He wasn't on drugs. He wasn't drinking. He wasn't on his phone. And I never remember the day of the inquest. Like, everyone was like, yeah, we're going to beat him up when he comes out. You know, Hayley was popular. You know, we had traveler friends. We had all different kind of group, circle. And I said, no, like that boy's got to live with that for the rest of his life. Like, he saw that, you know, and as he's walked out, Hayley's mum, oh, bless her, hugged him. I literally like that melted me. And I was like, wow, you're a good person because that boy needed that.
Mm.
Wow. Like, you know, and I was like, look, you know, I said to people like, look. Hayley's mum forgives him. Like, how can you be like that? It's no one's fault. You know, if anything, inside I'm thinking it's my fault. If I'd have met her, if I'd have picked her up, if I'd have done this, if I'd have done that. But, you know, in jail, I'd done a lot of work on myself. I'll sort of go into that later, but I'd done a counselling course. And, you know, like, I could have been the one to kill her. We could have run her over, you know, like, you know, am I always going to feel guilty? Of course, but I don't blame myself anymore, if that makes any sense, you know.
What did, like... Was the cause determined? Like, was it dark? Was she running across the road?
Yeah, so, I mean, where it happened, it was lit up a little bit, but it just before that, it was dark. So we don't know. I don't know if she'd walked and stumbled in front of him. You know, like, he just said in the inquest, he just didn't see her. Well, he just didn't see her. Yeah, and...
So how was your head after
all mess. Of this? Oh, mess. Yeah. I was waking up at 4 a.m, like, lead on the pavement where she'd been killed and stuff. Like, me and my mate was just getting smashed. Oh, I was getting absolutely annihilated. Like, I remember when I got the phone call in the morning and my friend rung and said, like, Hayley's died. I remember smashing the phone off the wall because straight away I knew. And then I was like, I said to my best mate, and I was like, Emily, you need to ring her back now. I need to know how, because obviously all I knew was that she was dead. So I thought, oh my God, had she been raped? Has she been murdered? Like that would have done, I would have done. I couldn't have like gone on. But yeah, not that it made it any easier, but obviously, it, you know, it made a sort of difference in my head at that time. But yeah, just getting smashed, literally. It's, you know, after a couple of months, I kind of drew myself out of it a bit and I started coming to, and I remember like some of my mates saying, like, I didn't think you was going to come out of that. Like, I'm so glad to see you yourself again. Like, you know, but yeah.
Wow.
So you get sent down for 11 days. What was it like going in first time, and which prison was it?
So I went to Bronzefield first of all. I didn't come out of my cell for like 2-3 days. I washed in my cell. I did. I absolutely shit myself. So like, so I'm probably going to
bed. I've got the lurgy. So
what was it like walking in? What could you see?
Do you know what? I remember going from, like, it's huge. Bronzeville's quite big. So as you come through, like, the main reception bit, you walk through, like, the courtyard and you go onto the wing. And I remember, I don't know if it was a governor or an officer or what, but, you know, I looked at her and then I smiled. She goes, do you know what? You're so lucky. You just smiled at me. And I was like, why? She goes, because I was just about to put you on the worst wing we got on here. And I was like thinking, but people used to say to me, I've got such a hard face. You know, when people look at me, until they get to know me, they think I'm a bitch. And I remember when I went to Bronzefield, this sentence around, I remember the officer showed me the picture and I thought, God, I look evil.
In your mugshot.
No wonder. Yeah, no wonder. Like, she was like, you're lucky. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. So I got put on a wing.
When you go in the beginning, do you have to get strip searched and all
that
kind of thing?
Do you know what? Back then you did. So you'd go in reception, they would strip the bottom half of you and then strip the top half of you. And that's like really degrading.
Is it only female staff can be present when they do that?
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah. But that's changed now. That's not actually legal they've got to have proper grounds to do that. Yeah, they can't do that anymore. They used to, so then they would, in Bronzefield, because after 7 days, I got a ship out note and they sent me to Downview. And when I left Bronzefield, I don't remember getting strip searched, but when I went into Downview, they strip searched me on the way in and when I got released. Yeah, so it is proper like...
Why would someone risk smuggling shit when
taking a prison lighter or something. Is it really that deep? Is it really, do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So, that was scary, but.
What about getting assigned a cell for your first time? What was that like?
Yeah. So they just like took me in my cell. Like basically you go straight on the wing. They put you in your cell and say, that's it. They don't tell you nothing. They don't tell you how the system works. They don't tell you when food is or absolutely nothing like that.
Were you on your own?
Yeah. Thank God.
Did your neighbours holler at you?
Do you know what? After about 3 days, this girl come in and I started chatting to her and we ended up like staying like in contact for a little bit. It was mad. Yeah. And then I sort of come out because, you know, she's like, what? You haven't eaten? Like, come out and stuff like that. So it gave me a little bit of like, because you just, when you hear of jail, you hear about like the horror stories or the movies or, you know, and you hear Holloway, there's always that story that a girl got raped with a broom and stuff like that. So you think that jail was like that, but it's not. It's, no. You know, there is horror stories in there. Of course there is, but it's not.
Did you hear of any in your 11-week stay?
No, not then, no.
11 days.
Yeah, no, I didn't. There was nothing because I went to, when I went to Downview, so obviously I'd done 4 days there. I didn't really speak to no one. Like, I remember on the day I was due in court and I said, in the night before, I said, look, I'm going to court in the morning. What's the procedure? And they're like, pack your bags, be ready for 6:30.
Yeah.
So I packed up my stuff and then like, I'm like thinking, all right, okay. It's 6:30. Okay, it's 7 o'clock now. So like just gone 7, I'm ringing the buzzer going, look, I'm supposed to be in court. So they're like, we've got no record of it, but I've got a letter from my solicitor. So they're like, no, first of all, sorry. They said, don't worry about it. Like, just go to your education thing, whatever you got to do. Like, we'll sort it out, you know. And then it's coming to like sort of 10, 11 o'clock and I've gone mental at this office. I like, obviously I'm quiet, but I'm thinking I'm supposed to be in court. Like I can get out today. So I've lost it. And then, I've got a letter in my cell, da, 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 da. And then all of a sudden everyone sort of come around me. Like, what are you in for? Who are you? Like, so it was like suddenly, cause I just sort of like lost my shit and I kind of didn't care about anyone else around me. It was like suddenly, like, you know, people wanted to sort of come and find out a little bit about me. But yeah, luckily then when I spoke to the governor, he was like, don't worry. He said, because whatever happens, we'll get you there, because we get fined £1,000 by not appearing you in court. But yeah, luckily the solicitor rang and I spoke to him and gave permission on loudspeaker to the judge and that, saying like, I give you like permission to deal with me without me there. Yeah, and then the officer come and pack your stuff, get your stuff, you're going. I was like, yes.
So on the day of your release, you go out. Do you have a plan?
I'm going back to sell drugs. Fair. Yeah. I need to make sure my phone's been looked after and stuff like that. Like, it was weird because even though I knew I was going to jail, I didn't believe it. I didn't believe it. I didn't go prepared. I didn't go with like a big holdall and, you know, and clothing and stuff like that. I think I took a little JD night bag and I don't even think there was really anything in there. Some underwear and a vest and stuff. Like, you know, I think in my head I was a bit delusional. Like, because my probation, the probation officer was saying, you know, I don't think you should be going. I don't think you should be going to jail. I kind of like in my head, it was like, oh no, I'm not going to go to jail. But yeah, I did.
So you get back into the mix. What was the next drama?
God, it's always a drama. I was all right for a few years and then I got arrested again.
This is like your late 20s.
I think I was around 29. I'm sort of guessing here. I can't. And I got arrested for, this is the first time I actually got arrested for drugs, and I've been doing it since I was a kid. I can't remember at that point. It wasn't a stupid amount.
How had they found out?
They always knew. They used to pull me over all the time and they used to say to me, Fran, you are one of the most politest drug dealers that I know, but we just can't find your fucking drugs. Like, that's what they used to say to me. If I was with the boys, like, you know, one time my mate, I had a couple of key of green in the car and the police had gone past and I was like, Sean, and they nicknamed him JJF, Jumping Jack Flash. This was what the police nicknamed him, you know, because he was on his toes. They could never catch him, never. Like, so he's gone, Fran, go around the corner, he's grabbed the bag and he's gone, he's bolted. And then they've come flying around the corner and it's like, who just ran out of your cars? I don't know what you're talking about. And they're like, all right, Fran, whatever, like, search the car, and off they went. So they just, yeah, there's been many a times where I've had such a touch or I've been with someone, luckily, and they've bolted. Yeah, they've pulled me over for being on a ban. And, you know, I've got like a little shoe hanging up, you know, the little kiddie shoes, and you hang them like my gog took.
Yeah.
And I have like 1/2 ounce of coat, but back then that was quite a lot, you know, and it'd just be sat in there, but they'd never find it, you know,
in the kids' shoes.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't their shoe anymore. That was like 4 or 5, you know. It wasn't like I borrowed their shoes and stuff and hid it. It used to hang on the mirror, you know. It's that kind of thing back in the day. Yeah, so I had so many near touches.
So where were you when this arrest went down?
So I got pulled over. So basically I moved in this flat with this guy, and he was big in the stuff that I'd got out of, if that makes sense. So that's what started hotting me up. Stupid of me, really. Again, you know, it was a dumb thing to do, you know, who goes and shares a flat? And I had something on me and they pulled me over and they're like, we're taking you for a strip search. Like, so I was just like, oh, they used to ram me, like block me off the road. They'd take me in for a strip search and stuff like that. And I remember one day they did it and I was just like, thank God. Something said to me, go home and like, go and do what you need to do and then go back out. And I did. And thank God, because they took me in. And one point there was just like, they my mate had picked me up from the flat and they was like, we saw you pass something through the window. I said, well, that makes no sense, because I just got in her car. You've just followed me out the road, so you're lying. They was like, Fran, do you want to get in the back of the van or do you want to go down the police station? And I was like, do it here, outside of Sainsbury's, and that, getting strip searched in the back of a riot van. And it's just like, and I remember saying to the officer, you just like seeing me naked, don't you? Do you know what I mean? Because I got to the point where I was so embarrassed, but it was like, no, I'm going to humiliate you. No, going all bright red and that.
Oh, brilliant.
But yeah, this one time they got me. It was like a 1.6 of like class A. And I think it was like half a a bar. Yeah, it was half a bar of green. Because obviously don't keep everything where you stay. But sometimes you do. Unfortunately, it happens. You grab it. You know you're going to meet someone in a bit. And that. And yeah, so I got away with that. Obviously, it wasn't a lot. I said it was personal, the Class A. The weed wasn't a huge amount. It wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't really a prison sentence. So I got like community service and I got a year suspended sentence. So that was that. Obviously, I carried on like you do, you know, didn't scare me, even though I knew I didn't want to go back to jail. And then, yeah, literally it was like 2 weeks before my suspended sentence ended. And so I kept stuff in a place somewhere. And this night, someone had been going on at me, like, I basically was renting somewhere to put some stuff, a unit, basically. And I was like, they wanted it out of this room because someone was moving in there. So it was like, so anyway, so I've gone and shifted, picked up all this stuff. And and that night I thought, right, it's like 9 o'clock at night. I can't go and put it down there now. It's dodgy. So I'm going to just take it home for the night. So anyway, so I did. So the next morning I go to work and my workplace had been ram raided and the safe had been robbed. So a friend of mine, he worked there and he was known for burglaries and I was known for being in this group of friends. So the police are like, right, we're arresting her and him. And I heard them say they were getting a warrant. So they've nicked me outside my work. But I knew it was just a hunch. It was just a thing. So luckily my godson worked there. And I said to him, everything's in the fucking house. Like said it to him as I've walked past. Yeah. And so miracles happened. You know, you got really good friends. But there was a key of green sat down the back of the garage, but it they didn't, not, no one knew it was there. I got saved that day, even though I didn't. And basically what I'd explained to probation and stuff, you know, I said, look, this happened before, I owed money, you know, I've had to get out of it, they've caught up with me, they've told me, you know, I've got to look after this and drop it off, you know, as I'm told. So yeah, so probation again wrote me an amazing report and said, you know, she shouldn't go to jail. You know, she's going to end up, you know, this is not her fault. She's got in a shit situation. And yeah, cut a long story short, basically I got away with a 2 year suspended sentence, 9 months. Oh yeah, I got tagged before. I got 3 months tag. This time I got 9 months tag and 250 hours community service. So yeah, just like, and you'd think that'd be enough, wouldn't you? And then I got, you know, I had a really good job. I worked my way up in the company. I become a branch manager. I got the job originally to look good in court as well. So obviously, you know, I've got a job now. I'm sorting myself out.
What was your community service job?
I was working in the graveyards. Working in graveyards, yeah, strimming all the graves and mowing the lawns. But I'm not like, it was that or a charity shop. And yeah, I'd rather be outside, but oh God, some cold weathers, some hot weathers. Like, yeah, it was graft, but
250 hours of it.
Yeah. And then you had to, and I worked every other Saturday. So some weekends I'd work, I'd have to do the, because you'd have to do 1 day a week. So I'd work, and then the Saturday I'd be at work, I'd have to do the community service on the Sunday, work all the way, do community service on the Saturday, and only get a Sunday off in every 2 weeks. So yeah,
no time for a social life.
No, well, I still found it in the evenings, you know, I'd run around, do what I had to do, but yeah.
So what was the next mishap?
So then that's when I got nicked for my big sentence.
What led up to that?
So I just, obviously I have an addictive personality. You know, unfortunately it went from sort of drugs and it went into gambling, and it was the buzz. It was all I ever knew, you know. One minute I could have no money, I'd owe money. The next minute I've got Rolexes, a truck, a Porsche, you know, it's literally going to different countries and stuff like that. And towards the end of that, I was gambling a lot.
What type?
Casino, roulette.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'd be like borrowing money I could see it was starting to get a bit out of control. So when I got nicked, it was a blessing. It was like, it was, I always knew I was going to jail. I always used to say, I would never regret my life because I've had a brilliant life. So, because everyone gets caught in the end, no one gets away with it. But, you know, I was given it at the time that it was right for me. Because if I'd have gone in younger and done 6 months or a longer stretch, I'd have been in and out because I wouldn't have been scared. But it happened for the right time for me. So, yeah, it was just, I was working, but then I was gambling, I was still selling and stuff like that. So yeah, things wasn't great at the time. And if I hadn't have been pulled into jail, I have no idea where I would have ended up. I do believe I'd have ended up in a lot of debt and a lot of trouble. So yeah.
How did the arrest go down?
This guy, he was my Cody, he was he'd been in a known gang before. I didn't know any of this. I only found this out. Surprise. I knew he was a big man. I knew he was someone not to be messed with. Do you know what I mean? I knew that. And I knew he hadn't long got out of jail. But yeah, cut a long story short, I went and picked up 7 Kia Class A and he was under surveillance. As I pulled out of the, I didn't know, obviously, but I pulled out of the pub and straight away this car come out, this gut feeling. And it was some old banger. I don't even remember what it was, but I remember it being nothing you would think was a police car or an undercover car. And I had this gut feeling in my stomach. And then as it's gone to overtake me, I'm like, oh, thank God for that. I didn't have to take me. They've boxed me in, haven't they? So they've so one goes behind, one comes in front of you and up the side. So they've caught me over there open the door. And obviously I'm thinking, where's the open door button? Because obviously they're smashing the car windows through. My missus at the time was in the car. They've dragged her out. And I've just gone, look, it's on the back seat. It's in a hold all. You're not hiding it. You know, that's where's the dry scream? But they've thrown her to the floor. And I've got, and I'm like, I'm not vicious. I'm not violent, sorry. And they're sort of they're sort of kind of threw back by it. But yeah, because they put her on the floor, I was like, listen, it's on the back seat. It's mine. Mm-hmm. Straight away, I was like, it's mine. And then, straight down to Kingston Police Station, in there for 2 days. And then we both got remanded.
What was the holding cell like in Kingston?
They're all the same, aren't they? There's shit bought, you go insane. You've got no TV, shitty mattress.
No clock.
No clock.
That's what annoys me when you go into a holding cell, that you've got no awareness of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I starve myself when I get nicked. I've been nicked loads of times.
I'm like, tea, sandwich.
No, see, for me, because if I starve myself, it makes me tired and I sleep. Yeah, makes me weak, so I sleep a lot.
It's me having a dinner party.
Yeah. It sounds stupid, but that's what I do, because I know, I can't mentally sit here. It's like torture.
What was the conversation like?
Which one?
In the holding cell. Did you say it was you and your missus?
Yeah, but we didn't go in the same, you don't go in the same room. You're separated straight away, obviously, because...
Did you get your own room?
So we talk about the police station. Yeah. You don't go in together because obviously that's my code D now. So I could threaten her. I could say anything to her. She could threaten me. So you're separated. You don't see each other again until you're getting remanded.
Was she schooled in police etiquette? No comment.
Yeah. Do you know what? It's funny because if I'm ever with someone, I always say, if anything happens, get a solicitor, do what they say. She did. I was quite surprised, actually. She actually did, and she went no comment. And obviously, in my interview, I turned around in my first one, and I said to him, "Look, it's mine. The guy I've met, I've never seen him before. I've said, I owed money. It was just passed between the two of us. That's it. Saving him, but wanting to get her." Out of it all, because she's come up from a good family. She's never been arrested before, so it's like, fuck, I've dragged.
You've but then been I think a bad influence.
Yeah, but then it's like, again, we were all adults, aren't we? We all make choices, but I done everything I could because I didn't want her to be remanded. So then the officer said to me, "Well, these two, you two Codys ain't talking. So how do I know you're telling me the truth? How do I know the drugs ain't hers? Because obviously I'm sat in a car. He's passed the holdall through her window and put it on her lap. And then she's looked at me. So he's flung it over the back seat. So it looks like I could have gone because the contract phone I had was in her name, so I could have gone, it's nothing to do with me. She's asked me to take her to meet someone. I don't know. It's her phone. She took the bag, not me. I didn't speak to him. I could have put the whole lot on her. But obviously I'm not that kind of person, and I'll take responsibility for my actions. And yeah, and then obviously then they re-interviewed me. I just went, no comment.
Did they let her out then?
So she got remanded with me, and then her her parents put up 10 grand for a bail to get her out. And then I done a deal, because they had me on conspiracy and they also had me on dealing. I wanted to go not guilty to conspiracy, but guilty to dealing. So I said, if you drop all the charges on her, I will take guilty on conspiracy, which I did. And it all got dropped on her in the end.
Well, I didn't know you had to pay for bail in the UK.
Yeah.
Wow, I never heard.
Yeah, but you've got to be like a non-risk. Like at the end of the day, you know, I've said that in an interview, the drugs are mine. They're not stupid. They've looked at, they, you know, once they look into my history, I would never have got bail. I could have put up like 200 grand and they still wouldn't give me bail because I'm a massive flight risk and stuff like that. But when you look at her situation, you've got sort of no reason really to not give her bail. But yeah, they had to put up 10,000. They get it back obviously when it's thrown out. But
so what was your day in court?
That was long. That was a long. Do you know what? It was all long-winded, because the first time we appeared in court, our solicitor hadn't been to see us. So I didn't know any of my charges, and I'm stood up and the judge is telling me, you know, you've got like 8 charges against you and all this stuff. And I'm like, what the hell? And my Cody, he's gone guilty straight away because he's still got a 9-year license. So he wants it over and done with, you know. And I've turned around and gone, well, I'm not pleading to anything. And then he's turned around and said, oh, and by the way, I can't deal with like both of you, because you're codees, like I can't represent you both. And I'm like, I don't want you anyway, mate. Like, you've not even come to see us. Like, why? Like, I don't even. So obviously I've got a bit arsy. Luckily the judge was really nice, because she was like, look, I can see that you've not been spoken to by your solicitor. We'll give you like a month. I can't remember if it's a month or 2 months to get a new solicitor. Look at the charges against you, and we'll still give you your third off. So you can just go not guilty to everything now, but we'll still give you your third off, because you have to go guilty at your first hearing plea to get your third off your sentence. Because otherwise, obviously, it goes to trial if you go not guilty. Trial date was set anyway. So I got arrested the end of June 2017. Our trial date was sent for like November, December time. Because obviously they just did that automatically because I went not guilty. I got a new solicitor and she was spot on. She only like dealt with drugs only. And yeah, so we ended up going to court again. And then it got adjourned because of my Cody solicitor was off. So then it got adjourned like through till January. So we're talking nearly a year later. No, so yeah, this turned out to be about 7 months, sorry, actually. And then I couldn't appear in court because I got the Aussie flu. I don't know if you remember that going around.
Aussie flu.
Yeah, it was killing people. It was back in 2018. They called it the Aussie flu, as an Australian flu, and people were dying from it. And they locked down our prison for 2 weeks. We wasn't allowed visits or nothing like that at all. Yeah, so I caught that. So it was just as bad as COVID. I couldn't even lift my head off the pillow. Like, I was so ill. So yeah, finally then. So then that got adjourned. And then February, I finally got sentenced. So that was a long waiting game. But because I had the Aussie flu, they didn't want me in court. So I didn't have to go and sit in the cell all day waiting to be sentenced. They'd done it via video link. So yeah, but that was long as well, because they were trying to say, oh, because I didn't go guilty straight away, I wasn't getting my third off. And then I had to argue all of that. And yeah, that 8.5 months was the worst bit of my sentence.
And where were you held during those 8.5 months?
Bronzefield in Ashford.
Okay.
Yeah, because you don't know. It's the not knowing. Like, how long am I going to get?
Yeah.
It was a long time. Yeah, it felt like forever. But everyone used to say, like, being on remand is the worst bit, because you're waiting to get sentenced.
It's messed with your head, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's not good.
So in Bronzefield then, are you in with all unsentenced people, or are you just
remand and sentence? It's a mixture, because it's a remand centre. It's a YO jail. So like 18 year olds go there. But yeah, it's a lot of remand.
Single cell again?
Single and doubles. So when we went in, we landed up in a double. We didn't say that we was together. So we got in a double, which were, well, I say it was fine. We used to argue all the time. It was just
what,
like,
you and your ex-missus?
Yeah. Like,
what, you managed to wangle it?
Yeah, we had. Did because you? Your first night when you go in, you have to go in a single cell, because of suicide watch. They need to make sure you're not high risk. Because if you're high risk, you get a single cell. And then the next day, they will grab anyone and they'll just chuck them into doubles because they need to fill the doubles over singles. So we went down to the office and said, look, we want to go in a double together. So that was fine.
Did they know you were in a relationship?
No. Kept it a secret. Because when we went in, my friends that I'm still friends with now, Vessa, she's still inside. She was like, she's the first person, other than having your picture taken, that you actually go in and see in this little room. She's chatting away and that, like, asking how I'm feeling. And I'm like, so what are you, like a prison counsellor? She's like, no, I'm a prisoner. I was like, shut up. So then she said to me, she like gave me the heads up, look, don't mention you two are together. You won't be on the same wing. So obviously, you know, we had the heads up and so we landed up in a double. We just kept it quiet. People asked us. We was like, no.
That must have been a sweet deal because you've got your sort of girlfriend.
Do you know what? Like, I was still shook though. Like, I don't know what. Do you know what it is for me? I don't do well with change. I have like meltdowns and it's the unknown. And the first night that I went in, all you could hear was screaming, kicking at the door all night, like screaming. You're thinking, what the hell? I'm in with some crazy people. And so it was like, oh God, what am I going to come out to in the morning? And stuff like that. But yeah, it was like I had a bit of home there. Like, When she went, it was like 50-50. I was so glad she had gone, so glad. But then it was my bit of home. Yeah. So it was like, oh no.
A couple of days you miss her.
Yeah. And then the next thing you know, there's like someone else like on your case and stuff. So it's like, yeah.
What was your daily routine like then?
So at first, again, we didn't know nothing. Like, it's prisoners that tell you everything. I had no pillow. They like didn't give a shit. They didn't get me a pillow or anything like that. I think I went 10 days without a pillow, and it was a prisoner that got me one in the end.
Right. Bad back.
Yeah, it was horrible because you're just like using whatever you've got there, like a towel or something in your room or whatever you can stick under your head. But yeah, there was a girl that done like a meet and greet sort of thing, come and spoke to you. That was a prisoner. And then you had the other one that was, she was a listener, which I become as well during my sentence, but she would come and they'd come and like check on us. I think they just sort of took a shine in to me, and not like in that way, but in that aspect, they come around and then she got on the case for me and like got me a pillow and stuff like that. If it weren't for her, I wouldn't, God knows when I'd have got a pillow. I'd have to still went out of someone's room when I got comfortable. Do you know what I mean? But yeah, my daily routine. So at first you don't work, you've got to do your induction, boring stuff, and then after like a week you end up being a wing cleaner. I was in the gym, so you'd have to go and spend like 3.5 hours in the gym, and like, so it was just boring because obviously I didn't want to train for like 3.5 hours every morning, you know. So sometimes we play like volleyball or badminton and stuff. That was all right, but again, that the jobs weren't that great until you've been there a little while. Once you've been there sort of 8 to 10 weeks, then you could get a better job.
And what was your first sign of trouble in there? Was there much
for me or for other people? Like,
start at the beginning.
Okay, God. Well, so I remember when they just brought in the smoking ban.
Oh, riots, I bet.
Yeah, so there was this one girl, you're in the dinner queue and you get to see everything when you're waiting for your dinner. And there was this one girl, you know, she was a bit of a rude girl, you know, sort of some people would be scared of her, some wouldn't, and stuff like that. But that one girl said to this girl, have a couple of drags on what's left of this, go and give it to such and such. So anyway, this girl's took the piss and give her like two drags left of this rolly. And next thing you know, like, and then this girl stood up. So this girl's took the piss with this like sort of gangster girl, and then this girl's just switched and gone, oh, I don't care, I'm sick of you fucking telling me all this sort of stuff, telling me what to do, blah blah blah. And the next thing you know, this girl's just gone dumb and they're fighting, like, they're proper like punching each other's heads in and that, and like all the officers come running, and like I got on all right with one of like the girl that was sort of like sort of gangsters. I remember running up and looking at her going, stop, like looking around, like, come on, look at me, like, stop. So then she's like, let go of this girl. And then they've just, yeah, so obviously they got a nick in, but it's just like proper punching each other's heads in over like a couple of drags on a rolly.
Crazy what bitch do.
Yeah.
So Tawana was telling us about the women hitting on her, but you're in a unique position as an undercover couple. How did you handle women hitting on you guys?
Well, she got out after 2 months. So okay. We kind of only just sort of got to know people. And it was a bit different. And so she'd gone. I mean, I didn't see anything. I don't, you know, people, I'm that kind of person, unless you say, Fran, I fancy you. Like, I haven't got a clue. You know, we're all, you know, you can have I'll have a flirt of a tree or something. You know, like, so it's banter to me. So if someone comes at me with stuff, it's a bit of banter. So it wasn't really sort of till towards the end of me being in my first jail that I kind of started realizing, oh god, a lot of people fancy me. But I did have one issue with one girl.
Go on.
God. So this girl has come into this jail, and I was new, so as soon as my partner at the time had left, I ended it, like, see you later, I'm not having a relationship with someone whilst I'm in here. And this girl's come in, she's really loud, northern girl, she's got the funniest personality ever, like proper wild. She, officers hated her, didn't want her back in the jail. She's one that gets shipped around because she'll bite officers.
What?
She attacks them. But I didn't hear all of these stories at first. Obviously,
I thought she was a nice girl.
Yeah, well, she's sitting on my lap. She's just moved on my wing. Don't even know the girl. She's sitting on my lap. She's coming on to me. I'm like, just get off me. Like, get off me. But I'm a newbie. I didn't know if you kissed a girl, they think you're married. So I thought, do you know what? I'll give her a kiss so she'll leave me alone. I don't know what world I was living in. Like, come on, Fran. Like, who kisses someone and thinks they're going to leave them alone? It's going to, you know, it's going to make it worse. So that was it. So I thought, I need this girl to leave me alone. You know, I'm still fresh in jail. I'm finding my feet. So I stupidly kissed this girl. That was it. She was obsessed with me. Obsessed. And it got to the point where I literally pulled an officer aside one day and I said, sir, I was like, please, can you move me wings? I said, this is the situation. I explained the situation. I said, please don't tell him I've asked to be moved. And he's come over to the, literally like 5 minutes later, me and this girl were stood by the gates on our wing, and he's gone, you. And I'm like, me? And he's like, yeah. He goes, pack your stuff, you're moving after lunch. Oh, mate, this girl's, no, she's fucking not. I'll smash you with the tables. Why are you gone psycho? Why are you moving her? Right. And he's like, because this is induction wing. She's been here over 2 months now. I'm moving her on. And that was the truth. That's normally what happened. She's going mental. Like, I'll beat any of you officers that try and come and take her and all this stuff. So they then had to, so we get locked in for lunch. So it kind of got left. So he just walked off. We get locked in for lunch. Anyway, they've gone and they fed everyone, put everyone's food into like little containers, fed everyone through the door so they could move me off the wing so she didn't kick off. So then I got this reputation. Oh, there's all fans and locked down the wing to move you, check you, G and that, like. But yeah, that was like, and then she just wouldn't leave me alone, telling everyone we was in a relationship and all this stuff.
What, you like, moved?
Yeah, she was
around.
The thing is, was her personality was brilliant. She was so funny, but she was, I don't want to like put her down, she's a bit delusional. Do you know what I mean? It was like, come on, like, no, like, yeah.
She tried to get you guys to have the same cell together at one point. Or?
No, she wasn't allowed because she was a high risk. So
was she in for?
It was to violence anyway. It was to do with violence. I think it was beating someone up.
Because they tried to leave her.
Yeah, probably, yeah. Jesus. Oh, but yeah, it was a lesson learned. Yeah. It was definitely a lesson learned. So that was a bit crazy. That was funny, but crazy.
So any more crazy fun encounters?
So I think that, that
what
was,
about the women having relationships with the guards?
Oh, yeah.
So there's a quite a bit of it going on in the especially in the first one I went in. Again, like obviously I wasn't on the receiving end of it, so it's not like facts, but you know, some of these girls will tell a story, some don't. But there was this one officer that used to bring nail varnish in for the girls to paint their nails, and he used to say to certain ones like, yeah, that colour will look good with your hand around my cock. Yeah, and there was like, you know, other officers were like bringing stuff in. There was women officers having relationships with women as well. Bringing in phones and stuff like that.
Did they have to like go in the broom closet or something out of the way the cameras are?
Well, do you know what the madness was? Some these officers, it is crazy. Like, there was this one on one of the house blocks I lived in. She would just come and sit in, like, the girls' rooms, get them to straighten her hair, have coffee, lay on the bed. There's just, like, the thing is if there's only a couple of officers on the wings, one will be the lazy one that sat in the office. The other one will just come in and sit, like, come and try and sit and chat to us and stuff. And sometimes I'll just be like, go away. Like, what do you want? Like, you'd be like, you're weird. And they're like, come. But then sometimes there'll be ones that you actually enjoy talking to because they're down to earth. They don't judge you and stuff like that. But yeah, it was just such a weird combination. You'd have ones that, like, looked 16 years old and were like this tall. Mm. And then you'd have, like, yeah, it was weird.
My co-defendant, a wild woman, was telling me about the female side in America.
We plaiting each other's hair.
And some females would get pregnant from the guards and what would happen and things like that. Did you ever hear anything like that?
There was one story, I think, of a prisoner getting pregnant, but that was before I was in there. So, yeah, they normally get arrested. And
what was the rumour?
End up that one guy had been sleeping with a girl and got her pregnant, and that he got arrested, obviously, and she got shipped out of the jail.
Did she have the baby?
I don't honestly know. No. Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know. But yeah, you hear some mad stories. But a lot of corruption. When I moved to the second one, the girls used to say to me, like my best friend that was in the second jail, she'd been there a long time, you know, and she said, yeah, such and such was sleeping with such and such officers and stuff like that. But the way they are, like some of them would just sit and read you like people's penomis and stuff and tell you what they've been in for. And then you'd have other ones that were strict and stuck by the book. And I loved them the most because you knew where you stood with them. Everyone was treated the same. And even though they're strict, you think, oh, God, they're on the fucking wing today. But you knew where you stood. Like, you'd have one that would want to come and flirt with you one day, but then want to tell you off for the stupidest thing the next. And it's like,
mind-blowing. So what sort of corruption did you see?
Officer-wise, I heard of it. I didn't actually see anything myself. Like I said, I heard about an officer sleeping because I think the prison caught wind of it but had no proof because this girl got shipped out. And I knew, so one of my best mates in the first jail was best friends with this girl. And obviously that's how she knew. This officer started bringing in my friend weed and stuff. And on, they have like a lock thing on the door. They test it. I don't really know what it was for, but she'd open that at night time because at night time they weren't allowed keys to your room, to your cells. Only the, what's the night staff called? There'd be two officers that would walk around the prison and they're the only ones that had keys. So wing staff weren't allowed keys anymore because of them going in, obviously, maybe raping a girl at a night time or having relationships with girls. So they couldn't get in the room at night time. So when she'd come on a shift, there's this little whole thing where they could have the key to open. It's just push like a bag of weed through. Yeah. Yeah. And that's factual. That's stuff like obviously that I knew because it's come from my friend. But
what is that thing, fishing? Did you ever go fishing?
Oh, no. I heard they, my friend, she was from Russia, one girl, and she said that they used to do that in the foreign jails. Like, they used to put the things through and pull it across and stuff like that. But yeah.
Passing.
Yeah, yeah. Not here. Everyone just done it blatantly. They smoked it on the wing. Yeah, you know, you'd have to see people walking around like zombies and stuff.
Spice.
Like
that. Spice,
oh,
yeah.
It was bad. It was bad when I was in there. Yeah.
Were you not tempted?
No. See, that's a weird thing is I'd stop taking drugs. I mean, I think the coke was really bad up until I sort of hit my 30s. And then, you know, I might have a cheeky drink and a line, but nothing. It was weird. It was just like, when I'm done with something, I'm done. So nothing tempted me, especially that stuff. Like, it's like, my life was destroyed too much already. When I went into jail, I kind of made that choice. It was like, right, this is it now. Like, this is it. I either close the door, because I was tempted to start selling in there myself. You know, and it was like, do I keep try and keep a line outside and that sort of stuff? And my dad come to visit me one day. So I've sort of gone off track, but he come to visit me and he said to me, I've never in my whole life seen my dad cry. And he started crying and he said to me, I don't understand why drugs. He said, anything else? He goes, I don't care if it's fighting, if you stab someone defending yourself. He said, but he said, drugs ruined your life. You know what it done to you. So why would you want to do that to other people? And he was crying and I wounded him. And it was like, wow, like it touched me. So I made that choice then that I was no longer gonna sell drugs or have it as part of my life. So I made that decision then that was it for me. And yeah, just seeing the way that people was walking around as well, like it was just like, no, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to be giving people that, and I certainly wouldn't want to be taking that. I'll never forget one day being stood in the dinner queue, and you can see in people's rooms, obviously we're like queuing up like outside people's cells and stuff. And there's my neighbour, I'm like, this girl who lived next door, and I'm looking, and she's like, is she looking at me? Is she all right? And she's like staring at me.
Straight.
And I can see people surrounding her. So I'm thinking, like, does she need some help? Like, these people, like, and so I've gone over going, what's going on? What are you doing to her? And then the next thing I'm known, like, I can see, oh, mate, she's off her nut. Absolutely off her nut. They're like, she's done spies, da, da, da. Never taken drugs before in her life, bearing in mind, like, this young girl got... You know, I don't know. She was in there for terrorism. I don't know if she was dragged into it or you know, because she's young. So it's kind of like, was you in the wrong group or are you just nuts? You know, whatever. But yeah, she's not okay. So anyway, they're like, get her to her room, get her to her room. And such said they're going to take her up. Anyway, they've left her to walk up these high flights of stairs. Something just said to me, now, Fran, follow her up. And as I've run up behind her, she's just literally dropped back into my arms. So like, it was like, she'd have just gone back if I hadn't gone behind her. Then the officer's seen and he's like, what's going on? Are you all right? And I was like, she's not well. She needs to go to her bed. He's not stupid. He was quite a sound officer, but he was sleeping with a bird in there. He got sacked. But he was all right. He was he generally cared about, well, I say that, but you wouldn't sleep with someone, would you? Just like, but yeah, then he kept looking at me, like looking in my eyes, like, are you all right? Are you all right? Like, yeah, I haven't done nothing. I don't use, like, I'm all right. But yeah, and it messed her up. She used to say to me, she could hear the TV talking to her. She was paranoid, thought the whole wing was against her. She went from this like normal-ish girl to absolutely just done. Like, never yeah, it, yeah, it just wasn't the same. She wasn't the same.
When you say you're sleeping with a bird in there, Dan, I'm just trying to, like, where I was at, there was a male prisoner who was getting with a female guard.
You're going to have to tell me the story
now. But you've got three people in the cell. So you can't really do anything in the cell. And she would take him off on cleaning duty and go somewhere out of view of the cameras.
Yeah.
So how would it be facilitated if he was, how you described this man sleeping with her?
Because they can just go in. They can just go into the cell and just shut the door. Like,
wasn't the cameras coming down on the cell and stuff? Yeah, and people walking past.
Like, it's just, that's how obviously they got caught in the end, because obviously no one's going to sit and watch footage of something unless something's been reported. So
they'd see him going in the cell on the camera. The camera wouldn't show like what's going on in the cell.
Yeah,
it just shows the room, does it?
No yeah. Okay. So it just shows you down the landing. They can't actually go like have any like. It's
I was
going
to say they wouldn't be able to have cameras in a cell.
So they'd notice him spending too much time in there.
Yeah, I think it got something to do with a phone. I think he brought his phone in for her to use or something like that as well, and that's how he got caught. I'd left at this point. I knew something was obviously going on because you hear the rumours. Obviously, if we hear the rumours, the officers hear the rumours. Like, so yeah.
And wouldn't you like hear what they were doing, like the neighbours, wouldn't they hear what they were doing?
You'd think so, but then it's nothing that a bit of music can't drown out. Everybody's got their music.
Oh, I forgot, because in America, it's all like headphones, you can't play music.
Oh, no, no, yeah. You've got your stereos, your TVs.
Oh, yeah. Crank the music.
Yeah,
up.
That's it, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
Look at you. So, there was someone in your jail, wasn't it, who did a naked dance?
Yeah, so.
To entice the.
I had a co-defendant.
Bad.
It was a cellmate of this person who was seeing the female guard. And he's telling me the story, and I'm looking at him in disbelief. I'm like, you're so full of shit, man. He says, no, like at midnight, just jump on your toilet, look out the window. And he does a naked dance on his toilet, and she'll be looking and laughing at him down from the fishbowl. So like at midnight, I got up there, looked out, and she was looking. And I couldn't see him, but I could, you know, I knew what was going on.
Yeah.
But what happens is, when you tell someone something like that, it spreads, and then the prisoners think, right, if I get rid of him, I've got a chance with her. Or they're just jealous and they just want to spoil it anyway because they're not getting any.
Yeah.
Is it the female side?
The female's horrific. Like the jealousy, the envy, the trouble that the girls want to cause for each other. Like you can be best friends with someone and literally like they will stab you in the back. Like I learned that a lot towards the end of my sentence as well. Like, you know, you're not stupid. You're in jail. People aren't your friends, but you do meet, you know, friends that I would have been and still will be friends for life, you know. So, you know, I got people that would come up to me nice as pie, like be, you know, oh yeah, friend, da da da, and then behind my back they'd be going like slagging me off or making up lies to an officer or something because I'm out doing my rottles and I'm doing well for myself, or I don't fancy him, or I didn't say hello one morning. It's the girls are so bitchy. It's unbelievable. So, you can't, if you've got something good, you need to keep it to yourself.
Keep it to yourself, yeah.
Yeah, because otherwise you can't even tell your so-called best mate in there.
Because you were the level-headed one then. You were sober, you said. Did you find that like people with dramas were coming to you to try and settle the dramas or...
I used to get called the voice of reason. Like,
I can see that.
Yeah. So, because I was someone that I never judged. Like, obviously, there's certain crimes I didn't want to know about. It didn't matter to me if you was a geek, if you was black, if you was white, if you was gangster, if you was whatever the hell. I just seemed to get on with absolutely everybody, and I'm not judgmental. Obviously, with certain crimes, yeah, I feel a type of way. But other than that, as a person, I don't have an image. I don't have stuff like that. So I would just get on with everyone. So then, you know, if there was an argument or if I felt someone was bullying someone or something, then I would have something to say. And people would tend to sort of listen to me.
Did you meet any, I don't know how, what you, you're going to have to cut this out if I say it wrong. Can I use the word sex offenders?
Yeah.
Did you meet any sex offenders?
Oh, yeah. Like, some of the people that I've been inside with, some of the stories were horrific. You know, I'd sit there, and when I was in the first jail, I didn't know anybody or what anyone was in for. I'm not someone that's going to go and ask you about your business. I'm not interested. I'm just here to do my sentence. Got myself a really good job. And I wanted to support women in the jobs that I'd done. So I would have to then go, and so I was a recovery mentor at first and a trained listener by the Samaritans, so we'd support prisoners. So I would go and work with women that were in recovery, so obviously it was good for me, I had experience, and you'd have like one-to-ones with them and stuff like that, so you'd go all over the house block. I had access to walk all over the jail, and you'd go somewhere and then you'd be sitting with me and you, and we'd have our little one-to-one, and I'd make my notes and stuff, and then someone would go, oh, you know, she's done like such and such. I'm just like, oh, don't tell me. Like, don't tell me. This is my job. Like, don't tell me. So we've been in there with, I was in there with someone that used to make their children eat dinner off the floor like dogs. A woman that used to make her children do sexual things to her. The woman that killed her 6 kids in a fire with her partner.
I remember that one.
She was my neighbour.
What?
Yeah, I didn't, in the first prison I was in, she was my next door neighbour. There were so many sex offenders or kiddie killers. And do you know what the madness is I done inductions as well. So you meet and greet people that come into the jail straight away. And some of them come in with such attitude, like their shit don't stink. Like they've got no remorse for what they've done. And yeah, it's tough. It's tough to even have to be sat in the same room as someone like that.
Do you not want to just go over there and...
Literally, like, if I don't know and someone tries to tell me, I'm like, please don't. Like, you know, I don't want to know because it makes it tough. And my journey was about supporting other women and trying to help other women. And luckily, I never had to have a call out as a listener with a sex offender or anything like that or ever have to... Because as a listener, you cannot judge anyone. So if someone wants to call you in and tell you about their crime, you can't say a word. And it was a tough choice to make. It was really tough, but it was how I wanted my journey to go. And I'm very thankful that I never had to, because I don't know how I would have reacted, if I'm honest. I really don't. But they get protected. This is the crazy thing. So it's like they would go on like a good wing, like but officers they would kindly tell you, they'd like, do you know what such and such is in for and stuff like that. Like some of them used to tell us like the crimes that they was in for. But if in the second jail, if they managed to go to main block and they'd been on the news, the girls would beat them up. The girls would get to them.
Good.
There was one girl, she was joked. She'd always go for like the sex offenders or the kiddie killers. And she'd get hold of them. Yeah. Bless her. And then they'd go off down to J Wing where they all are. It's like a whole house block full of them. And they all think, you see them walk around the courtyard and they all think they're like something. But if you come up to main block, like your attitude would be knocked out of you. Yeah.
What were the officers like with them?
Just some of them would treat them different, like purposely, you know, like wouldn't be helpful. And we used to say to them, like, how do you deal with that? And they'd just be like, well, if you haven't got a choice, it's our job. Shit, but the worst thing is you only hear certain stuff. We've got in-depth detail, like on their penomis and stuff. So...
But then again, the officers get to go home. You've got to be with them full time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You've got to, you know, you've chose to do a job of, and you know you've got to be professional and stuff. Like you say, you go home. But, you know, when you sit and you know someone's sat at a table over there and they've done this to their kids and stuff, it's just like, it's just twisted. Like, you're ill.
So you finally get your day in court. How long did you get sentenced for? We'll go through the day.
No, that's right. So I got 11 years, but they took my third off in the end. So it was 7 years, 4 months. I served 3 years, 8 months. Okay. Well, in total, yeah. So I served just under 4 years.
So what was the worst thing you ever saw handed out? Beat up, violence?
I didn't see it. I saw like the aftermark of someone had a burnt face for they used to put the boiling water with sugar in it.
Yeah, I've heard about that recently a bit.
Just over money what is it owed. Called?
Jugging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other drug debts.
Yeah, just over a tenner or just being gobby to each other. But I think like the worst fight was probably that one I told you about earlier. Like it, you know, it was quite heavy handed, but I didn't see a lot because I always worked to be on like resettlement wing. So you had to be good. You had to be, it was a privilege to live down there. Like we weren't locked in. Our doors were never locked. They couldn't lock them. We was allowed out of our rooms till 10 o'clock every night. I didn't see a lot of it. I always worked on just keeping my head down. I knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to get out, do my rottles and just behave. Like, so I didn't see a lot of the fights,
violence.
What about high profile serial killers, Rose West, that kind of thing?
I think she was there just before I got
was
there.
She?
Yeah. Joanne, I don't pronounce it right, Dennehy.
Oh, Dennehy. Oh, yeah. My God. Christopher Berry Dees told me about this one.
Yeah.
Jen's not familiar. Can you run the Dennehy story down?
Yeah. So she just went, I'm sure it's the second or third woman in the country to never be released from jail. like she'll never be released from jail. She went on a killing spree, basically.
Didn't she recruit
men, women, kids?
A man, was it like a giant guy?
Do you know what? Like I knew Joe in there. Like we spoke. It started from a bit of banter because I used to get people used to think I looked like her. Yeah, and do you know what? I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh yeah, she did this, she did that, because that's just what they say.
The media.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, all I do know is it just started at debt collecting. And what happened. And that's her story that she likes to and wants to keep very private.
What allegedly happened?
So she went out and I think it was 7 people she attacked, but I think 3 died. You have to quote me on that. I think that's, but she's a notorious serial killer, basically.
Yeah.
And the media perceived her as loving it, and that's what she went at. You know, she got a kick out of it and stuff like that.
But what was she actually like?
It's just like a human being. Do you know what I mean? Like I said, I would never sit and repeat some conversations we had. But it's not. I'm not sitting here saying she told me exactly what happened. But there was little things that, you know, she did say. But I remember saying to her one day, like, you know, she said to me, she goes, it's annoying when people try to sort of bum lick me because of who I am, because of, you know, and she said, or get scared of me or whatever. And I said, no, I said, the thing is like, I was like, you know, I'm in here with loads of murderers. You're no different, but you just killed a few more, you know, you went a bit happy sort of thing. But there's nothing, if I'm not scared of one murderer, I'm not scared of you, you know, like.
Did she get much fan mail?
Oh, yeah, I heard she got loads of fan mail, yeah. That some stuff she wasn't even allowed, apparently. This is not through her telling me. This is through other prisoners and stuff, yeah. My mate used to work in reception and they'd see, like, stuff coming in and, yeah, she'd get a lot of fan mail.
What, like positive or...?
Both, yeah. Yeah.
Were some of the women really afraid of her?
Yeah, it was just because of her thing, but she wasn't someone that would bully anybody. She wasn't someone that would... You know, like she was just Joe, but because of her big storyline, obviously vulnerable people are naturally going to be scared of someone like that. But, you know, you got to remember that you could be sat talking to 4 murderers there. You know, if someone kills someone, they kill someone, like that's in them to do that. So you don't need to be afraid. She wouldn't give off a perception that people needed to be scared of her.
Did she say why she went on her spree?
No, not really. Like I said, I don't really want to comment because I feel from what I can gather, her thing's very private. And if she wanted to sell her story, she could have sold it in a heartbeat. And I think that, you know, I could be wrong, but she might like that. I think that's what she likes about it, is that she holds all the cards. Mm. So that makes sense. So I wouldn't sit and repeat anything that she had said to me.
No.
Sometimes life is like that. They're the most adapted to the system and they're like quite reasonably behaved because they're just getting on with it.
Yeah.
Like when they first come in, they make kick off and stuff. So was she just like settled into a routine, accepting that she's going to do never get out?
Yeah, she was in, I think, because obviously I heard about her before I'd actually met her. And she was in, what's it called, segregation for 4 years. They obviously, because it was such a big thing, they wanted to keep her there. Then they integrated her back into, like, the prison. And she would sort of go back and forth, you know. Like, if she had enough, she'd sort of go back to segregation. I guess if you've lived in there for 4 years, you're kind of like being around a lot of people can be, it's a lot anyway, you know, and all the madness that goes on. But yeah, she'd go to the gym, you know, she'd just, from what I can gather, you know, it is what it is. And again, this is not what she said, but there was rumours that she stood and said, if you let me out, I'll do it again. Cool. Hence why she wasn't allowed out. And like I said, that was not her that told me that. That was someone the rumours I heard when I got in there. You know, she doesn't kill women or kids. Again, that's what you hear about her, you know, and stuff like that. But yeah, I remember I went for a visit one day and the officer was like, you look like, has anyone told you like Joe? And I'm like, who's Joe? Like Jojo. And she's like, it's the eyes. And I was like, no, cheers for that. Anyway, and then someone come up to me and they was like, I hope you don't mind me saying this. I was like, what? This was like real in a short space of time. I was like, I thought you was Joanne Dennehy the whole time you was here. And I'm like, she goes, until someone said to me, no, that's Fran. And then someone shouted Joe. And then like, obviously I've turned around. They're like, I'll realise I wasn't. And that's how we started talking. I was like, God, everyone keeps saying I look like you. I've got your eyes and that. So we make a joke like of being like twinny and stuff. You know, and then that's when you just realise, oh, fucking hell, she's just... All right, some people might not say that, you know, she's human, but she is human, you know, she's just, if I didn't know, I would just think she's just the same as everybody else, you know.
So any other famous killers? Criminals?
I think there's a few people that have been, like I said, there was the woman that killed all her kids in the
what
fire.
What was her name?
I can't remember. Was it an insurance job or something?
Yeah, I never remember. Yeah. Phil Potts and Louis Den. I can't remember.
Was it husband and wife involved in that, was it?
Well, they were Mrs. and Mr. I think they did aim to get the kids out, didn't they? But it all just went horribly
wrong. But why would you do it with the, why would you full stop, but why would you do it when your kids are in there anyway?
Like, you know, Sorry.
Sorry.
That's all right.
There was a few that have got like high profiles that have been on the news, that her and their partners had killed their kids and stuff. There was a few, because it was just mixed, Joe. There's so many different crimes in there.
Yeah.
Especially in the remand one, because it's a Cat A, they keep high profiles. So like when they ship Joe out, I'd left at that point, but they'll do a swap for swap. So they'll bring in another high profile from another jail and send her out.
Wow.
So in America then, you get certain status determined by what crimes you've committed. So like armed robbers might be quite high up, or cartel bosses might be quite high up. Is there a status hierarchy in the female prison system in the UK?
No, all it is you're high risk. You're high risk and low risk, that's it. So if you're in for violence, even if it's fighting, you'll be high risk, which means you're not allowed to double up. Because obviously you're at risk of beating up your pad mate. If you're a murderer or a terrorist or a kiddie killer or sex offender, you'll be a high risk.
Are there many female terrorists?
Yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, quite a lot, yeah.
They say that a lot of women are in prison because of men. Is that the case for the female terrorists?
Well, that's what they say, isn't it? But I don't think
I'll have no fury than a woman scorned.
You know, like...
People holding guns, holding drugs, things like that.
Oh, in that kind of aspect. Yeah, I thought you meant the terrorism. Sorry, yeah, because I think they like to blame the partner, don't they? But, you know, with that kind of stuff, I don't know. But, yeah, so many women. It's actually really sad because you know that they're in with the gang boyfriend, and then they hold the gun and the drugs, and, yeah, they're doing some bird in there.
Which brings us to Tawana then, because she had guns, didn't she?
Yeah.
How did you bump into her?
So when I moved to the second jail, I done a wrapped course, which is, they call it the 12 steps out here program. And she was a mentor on the group. So I was on it. I done this course for like 12, 14 weeks. So that's how I met her. And then I ended up moving down to her house block. And then for the last bit of our sentences, we ended up living on the same landing. Yeah, we used to party together all the time. We'd have association room. And so it was quite big. Had a pool table, sofa, widescreen TV, fridge, microwave. We'd have a George Foreman in there. And we'd party. So when it was people's birthdays, we'd cook up curries. We could buy anything in there. We'd make mad food, really good food in the microwave.
She's really good fun, isn't she?
She is a good girl. We'd like put on the music, you know, then we'd like dancing and stuff, and then I'd go off and get the mop, and we do like the mop. What's it called where you go under it? Is it mumbo? No, what's it called?
Limbo.
Like, and we'd be doing that, and like the music would be pumping, the officers would be coming over, J Wing, like this is all like the sex offender wing. They're complaining because they can hear your music.
Turn it up.
Yeah, so we would, and we'd just be like, go away. It's like my birthday. We're partying. Like, and we'd get Cherryade, and they'd do coffee shots with Cherryade, so they like everyone would be like hyper, but all on coffee.
E numbers.
So yeah, me and Twana used to like have a mess around, like not like that, like as in like have a laugh and stuff. We'd have parties and stuff together. Yeah.
Were a lot of prisoners on meds?
Yeah, to be fair, a lot, all different. Do you know what? In the first chow, the amount of mental health, it was awful. So you've got people that are on meds for mental health. You've got depressant, you've got methadone, you've got all different kinds of meds. Yeah, it'd be like a riot at med time, like the queue and stuff like that.
People pretending to mouth them. Yeah, all the time.
Yeah. I don't know how they got away with it, but they'd like pretend to like swallow their meds and then they'd come back and sell it. Yeah.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah, loads of girls used to do that.
What other hustles were going on in there?
People would phones. Drugs.
The little phones.
Yeah, one of my pals, they had a little smartphone.
What? Like, touchscreen?
Yeah, could go on the internet and stuff with it. Yeah.
Tattooing?
Yeah, in the first jail, there was one girl that did tattooing. Yeah, they'd...
Have you had any of yours done there?
No. They're not that good. But it's like they'd be a needle. Get a needle with black paint. They'd nick
Indian
paint.
Ink.
Yeah, but they didn't get that. They'd use actual black paint. Like if someone was working in arts or something, they'd nick black paint. And
is that not a bit toxic if it goes in?
So spice. Yeah, it was a lot of madness.
So would someone have to watch out for the guards while the tattooing was going on?
To be honest, like, it sometimes the guards were nosy as hell, but other times they're just so lazy. They can't be bothered to like walk up and down the wings, or as far as if they've got an easy wing that's quiet, they're happy. They're happy. Like, they'll let you get on with it. And sometimes it was nice. Like, just leave us to it. We're not really causing any drama.
Did you have a tool in there of any sort? I doubt you did.
No.
Not
me. I was trying
just
to be
one of those general questions.
Yeah, no.
Was there a code word if like a guard was doing a walk? Because where I was at, if one guard came in and one guard was doing a walk, someone would yell one time. If two guards came in and were doing a walk, it'd be like two time or three time.
Oh, no. Yeah. We'd like, if we was in each other's rooms after night time, so say if I was at the front of the facing the office, like, so if someone opposite would be like, right, we'll go in my room and we'll look out my window. So you, because in where I lived at the end, the office was like the other side, so we'd see them walking over. They couldn't get in any other way. Or someone would stand at the top of the landing, pretend to get hot water, and they'd just go like, Fran, like, but you know, they'd give you a heads up or something like that.
Was self-visiting prohibited?
Yeah, after 9 o'clock, we wasn't allowed in each other's rooms. We wasn't allowed our doors shut in the rooms either.
If you
had someone else in there, sorry. If I had you in my cell, we have to have the door open. And then after 9 o'clock, you had to be either in the association room till 10 or in your room.
Would people get caught frequently?
Not really, no.
No, just
always one step ahead of the game. And at the end of the day, they wasn't allowed to enter your room. They didn't have keys at a night time. So it was only, I can't remember what they were called now. They had a special name. It wasn't warden, it was something, but they would walk around at night time and they were the only ones that, like I said, that would have a key. So if I got called out at 3 a.m. to go and do a listener call, they would lock us in a cell to do the call. But if we were finished and we'd call, we could be waiting an hour in the bloody room for them to come and let us out. So,
yeah.
What was the food like?
Do you know what? It was all right.
Was it?
It was all right in the second jail. I in the first one, it wasn't that great and the canteen was quite crap. But in the second one, I got on with people. So like, they'd like, Fran, I'd come back from the dining hall with containers of food. They'd load me up all the time. And then obviously we could cook so much food until we got locked down in COVID. We could cook and the stuff you could buy on the canteen was out of this world.
What was your favourite items on the canteen list?
Pepsi Max. I'm an addict for it.
You still like it now?
Yeah. I'm terrible. I think I got, because I used my mate's phone. I took pictures. I was like, before I leave, I want to use your phone. I want pictures of myself. I think I got a picture of like stacks. And I used to put money in other people's in their account, like outside, they'd put it in and I'd be like, my best mate, she's passed now, sadly, but in there, she didn't really have money sent in. So I'd go like, right, I put 25 in, like you have £7.50 of it. And then she'd get me whatever I wanted on canteen because you could only buy a certain amount of stuff.
What would 20 quid get you in there?
Quite a lot. It wasn't too bad. You could get like, Pepsi Max was like 50p a can.
Bargain.
Mm, and you was allowed, like, I think, six or something yourself, something like that, six or eight. Like, then you couldn't buy anymore. So everyone used to, in COVID, it got restricted. And honestly, I'd have, like, about eight girls come to me here. Here's a bit like, and we'd, like, do, I'd buy them £2 worth of whatever. And then they would, like, get me £2 worth of Pepsi Max and stuff. So you could get a lot, though. You'd get, like, all fruit, veg, onions, garlic, all seasoning, pasta, spaghetti, passata sauce, tuna, salt, flour. Like, I don't...
Flour?
Flour.
Bacon?
Yeah, we used to make... They used to make dumplings and stuff. The girls would cook up curries and stuff like that. I've still actually got one of my canteen sheets. I brought it out with me of all the stuff on there because I don't think anyone...
Could have understood.
No. Yeah.
Wow. Were people running their own shops?
If you went into my room, you would think I was a drug dealer because I used to put money in people's account and I used to stock up and I would have so much food, so much chocolates. But there would be girls that would sell stuff and then they would pay them in canteen. So their rooms would be full of everything, like a shop.
And was it run like on a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1? Or?
Do you know what? No one really... No, the fakes.
Double bubble, don't they call it in the UK?
Double bubble.
They went wild.
They did that up in main block. They'd be like, if you borrow one, we want two back.
Yeah.
And if they were, if someone was really desperate and they were arseholes, I'd be like, well, you can have one. I want a box of three back. So they'd have to pay back like three for that one. Yeah, so that went on a lot up at main block, but down on our wing, people would just lend people stuff and you pay it back, and that was it. It was like a little family.
Oh.
Like, yeah, it literally was. I mean, don't get me wrong, you had the backstabbing and all that stuff, but come on, you've got 40 odd women on a wing. They all have periods. Mm. You know, we are bitchy anyway, some of us, so you can't, you know, but it when you really needed people, they were there. And the parties and the fun we had, and I've had the best Christmases in there. Even in lockdown, I think was one of the best Christmases I had. Even though we weren't allowed out of our rooms, we all sat on the door in our doorway. We was allowed to sit all main block, and that were locked in because they weren't allowed their doors open. But we sat on our hallway, and we all chipped in the whole top landing. We cooked food in our kettles because we weren't allowed hours.
What did you make in your kettle?
Spaghetti and like curries. But it'd take forever because you'd be boiling, this, like frying up the onions and garlic in the kettles. And bearing in mind, they're like this big because they blow the electrics and it'd take hours and hours. And you'd like, so we'd make all different kind of foods. So we'd prep it all and we all chipped in and had a big feast Christmas Day, put the stair on the landing. And it was just a brilliant atmosphere. Everyone was just happy and stuff. Like,
well, didn't you get this occasional person who would arrive and upset the apple cart and you'd have to run them out?
Yeah, there was always one moody bitch on something, like, yeah, or always like cussing someone else, and it's just like, just leave it. Like, you just don't, why are you so worried about what they're doing and what they're not doing? And yeah, there'd always be someone that's got to put someone else down. And
yeah,
you know, don't get me wrong, I had a bitch about people, because we're human, don't get me wrong, but you do it to your best pal. You don't stand on the landing and give it all F in this and F in that. And
did you have a strategy for getting rid of people like that?
Well, some of us would get on well with the officers and stuff like that. So they would start being on the same level, because if they're an irritant to us, they are to them, you know, because all that whining, they're going and doing it to the officers as well. So yeah, they would get to the point where they'd threaten them to, you know, if you got like move, if you don't like it, or, you know, we'll give you negative IEPs, you get three, you're kicked off, and stuff like that. But
what the next prison story was, yeah. The Secret.
Yeah.
How you came about the book The Secret, okay. Rhonda Brides. Have you read it?
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah. So yeah, how it changed your life.
Yeah, so in the first jail I was in, I kind of just like hit a low and stuff. Like, I got really, really down, and it was like, shit, I've got to go back out to a life like that. I've lived a life of crime for like 20 odd years, so I got to go back out to this new life. And it was like, I wasn't really sure what my purpose was. I just hit a low basically anyway, and I told my friend about it, and she was like, read this book. And I was like, I don't read. I've never read a book in my life. Like, even at school, I pretend that I read a book and I hadn't. Like, I'm that person that will read into four sentences and my head's thinking about what's for dinner or something. I can't focus. But she was like, Fran, like, trust me, read this book. And I was hooked. And it was hard for me to concentrate, but I took it in and I read it about four times, literally. And it just changed my whole way of thinking. And I'd have like this little, I can't remember what I did. I did like a little test of it. You know, it says like, oh, think of something and if you want it, you'll get it. And I was like, right, I need to move jowls. And like I've said to you before, you know, I'm meltdown moving a wing, like, you know, I can't deal with change. And I remember asking the universe, like, please let this be for the best sort of thing. And I'll never forget, like, I was like, do it, OMU, move me. They tried to keep me there. The managers of recovery, nobody, they was like, why are you going? I said, I don't want the jail to ship me out. I want it to be my choice, but you're on hold. Your jobs hold you. Like, this is crazy. Why are you going? And I said, because I'm not happy. Like, I'm, and in the end, they respected it. And I moved. And on the day that I moved, three of my really good friends were on the same bus moving to the same jail as me. So they shipped them out. Yeah. And then I ended up doubling up with my mate. All right. You know, she'd done spies and she was naughty. She was a bad girl, you know, one of them.
What, like, was she in for?
Drugs. Yeah. Do you know what? She wanted to get clean. She did, but she just wasn't ready. And I think that's in everyone's point. You know, like, I am a recovering addict, so I know, you know, you've got to be ready. You know, unfortunately, she just wasn't. But yeah, we moved, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. As I was saying earlier, I'd done a course that I met Tawana on. Done a lot of self work on myself. I dealt with my friend Haley's death and stuff like that. I learned so much about myself. I remember sitting there one day and I just started crying. This counselor done, and then because they was explaining the mind, this triangle thing, and it was like, I just broke down crying. She was like, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" And I was like, I thought I was the only fucked up person. I thought I was the only one. I thought I was the only one with a crazy mind. I didn't know this was a thing. I didn't know it was real. Like, and obviously that's part of like being an addict and learning about how your mind works, and then working with the secret, the power, and the same process, the magic. It was powerful. It was really powerful for me.
The first time I manifested something, this is actually so prophetic. I didn't do like a jail move jail. I manifested one of my ex-boyfriends to bring me a chicken drumstick round. It worked. Yeah.
It's mental.
I wish I'd gone for something bigger now.
you can keep going.
Yeah.
You know, it never stops, does it? You just got to believe, literally. And it's mad. You know, some people are like, that book's poison. It's like this, that, and the other. But it's like a religion, isn't it? You know, you can have your belief and that's it. You respect each other's belief.
So did you find jail easier from that point?
Do you know what? Like, yeah, mentally in myself, definitely. And I walked into this jail and it was like, I had girls coming up to me like, I want to get with you. I want to get with you. And it was a bit mind blowing. It was like,
what, you were manifesting relationships?
No, they were just coming. They were just like, the girls were coming to me. And obviously being outside, like, I never had confidence about myself, and I used to think people were with me because of the money or the cars or, you know, what I could do for you or stuff like that. I never really thought people were with me for me. I never realized what people ever saw in me. So when you go to jail and you can't offer any of that, and someone's looking at you and saying you're hot, like, it's like, oh shit, like, it kind of grew my confidence and I grew as a person. You know, did I get a little bit cocky inside? Of course I did, you know, not in a malicious way. It wasn't like that. But then, you know, and I met my partner that I'm with now. So yeah,
What's the etiquette of dating in jail?
It was tough because I met my partner. I was doing induction. So I meet and greet the women that come into the prison, and I met her, through her coming in. She'd got shipped out of another jail and she come through, and I remember like looking at her thinking, oh, I'm in trouble. Mm. I knew, you know, when you just know, like, you meet someone and you just think, oh, she's like, not quite, you don't sort of look at them and go, oh, they're the one, but you know, you're in trouble. So, Yeah, and we was on different house blocks. So she used to try and say to me, you know, come on, come move on house block 2. And I'm like, I can't. I'm a good, respected prisoner. Like, you know, I'm not going to give up my shower in my room to come and live on here. And I don't know, you know, I don't know anything about you. But we connected straight away because she lost a friend and she had guilt over that. And we just had this and we were like home. And she got shipped out and moved to this other jail. And I wanted to go and follow her. And I was being held for a course. But then I got out of that and then we hadn't spoke for a couple of weeks and I was quite glad because it was my choice to go for me and not because of her. So anyway, cut a long story short. And then it was a bit messy when we got there because obviously people were coming to me. We didn't, the same vibe wasn't there. It was all weird. And then we had it sort of like on and off. And then when we was okay, like I would go up and then I'd go and pretend I'm doing a walk or whatever to see people. And I'd sneak in the cell for like 20 minutes, but then I'd be like a little nervous wreck because I get caught, I'm getting sacked. Yeah. And she's like, what's wrong with you? Like, come on. Like, you know, ooh. But you get away with it.
Did she tell you her story or is that something you can't?
Yeah, no, basically it was for fighting, you know, out a few drinks, someone gets like mouthy and starts on her, and she's not someone that, you know, she doesn't, she holds her own, and I love that about her, you know, like she doesn't, you know, she won't take shit, whereas I'm someone that would rather walk away than fight, not because I can't fight, I don't want to, like, but she, you know, but she's fiery, you know, like I said, and that's something that I do love about her. So she got a couple of years, she got out before me. And waited the whole time in lockdown for me.
So when you was in the beginning, it was like undercover.
Yeah.
Is this undercover? This woman, now you found the love of your life, but you have to hide it?
No. We're out. Our families know. We're like...
No, I mean in the prison.
Oh, in the prison. Sorry, God. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, no. Like you're not allowed relationships in jail. Like, you're not allowed them. And especially for me to be like, you know, she's gobby. Like, you know, and so for me to be involved with a prisoner that's naughty and I've got a pass to walk around the jail because I'm doing a really respected job, it's like I would have lost my job.
Were people suspicious?
Yeah, like people, officers weren't. Some officers used to make a joke, like she'd pass a love letter through the window and then be like, Fran, come on, like, God's sake, you can't take you anywhere sort of thing, like, you know, and have a laugh. But not really, because I didn't abuse it that much. I was too scared to, if I'm honest.
Did anyone try to come between you two?
They did.
I can imagine a house
and it
full
was
of women.
Like that, and you know, and I did stuff to, like, not like cheat stuff, but I did stuff, you know, to upset her and stuff anyway. You know, I wasn't perfect and no one really is, but it's, yeah, any relationship people try and get in between, or people are trying to sleep with people's partners, it's just like a not a sex fetish, but like everyone seeks with everyone, like it's mad. It's like, you know, someone will split up with someone and then they'll be with someone's best mate the next week, and then they'll split up and go back with who they was with before. And it's
so
like...
So it's proper like Orange is the New Black?
Yeah, probably worse than that.
Wow.
Like, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy, yeah. That dog's on heat, like, literally, like, yeah. It's mad.
Because when I spoke at Send, it's like, I could see, like, what I thought were couples in the audience.
That was your second prison, was it?
Send was, yeah.
I could see what I thought like were couples in the audience. Are you saying that that's got to be hidden, or can, like...
Tell a lie. You can have a relationship in there, but you have to justify it. It has to be signed off that it's a healthy relationship, that, say, that one of them won't make each other self-harm, that it's not a bully kind of relationship, and you're not allowed to live on the same wing, if I'm correct. So you can only meet on like association time. But I think some girls did live on the same. Yeah, you're not supposed to live on the same wing, because then you can have sex, because you're not allowed to have sex in jail.
If only they applied that to the outside world.
Everyone would be committing crimes.
So there's an advantage to declaring it, but then
if I'm honest, you're a mug if you declare it. Yeah. Because you are not having a relationship.
No.
You got your love letters and a kiss on your 20-minute like exercise. That's if you go out at the same time. some jails. So yeah.
Over my years of incarceration, I received a few love letters, and
men or women?
Men. Men. Yeah, yeah.
What would they say?
So one guy, he said he saw me like the sun was rising and I was doing my yoga and he saw the sun coming down through my... This is how it started. Yeah. But then it was like, you know, don't tell anyone I've sent you this. I'm serving life. After you go so many years, you know, without the company of a woman, you need the company of a person. And then he started to go on about his oral skills. And, you know, we'll just arrange a time in a room when,
oh, wow.
You know, I'll show up in your cell when everyone's at recreation.
And you weren't tempted?
No.
But that was, I'm just baiting the comments.
The only time, there was a trans prisoner who cut both of them off. Looked like a woman, had the perfume and everything. That was the only time in my head I was thinking, wow, there is, you know, a possibility, but I didn't go there because I had a female visiting me. Yeah, so I'm going to get myself
trolls going to go wild.
which leads to my question then. Like, so, you know, seeing love letters from men, to me, what they contained, like, what kind of things do women... I imagine men are more crude than women.
Yeah, yeah. Women, no, they don't hold back.
They're, really?
Yeah.
When I've wrote love letters in the past, you know, 16-year-old Jen.
To women?
No, to ex-boyfriends. In that box there, it's my memory box. There's old love letters from men. Get them out one day for a podcast. You have a riot.
Someone's going to be breaking in now. Just put those online.
But, you know, I find we're better writers. Yeah, more passionate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, there is all that kind of stuff, but the sexual stuff as well. Like, yeah. They used to make things. You used to hit up. Yeah, they used to make toys and stuff as well. Like,
ooh.
Yeah. Like,
like melting plastic. Because I had a trans prisoner who melted plastic and made sex toys.
Prisoners.
You had trans prisoners.
Yeah, yeah. We had, we had a few. And they, one of them got chipped out for not taking the meds and sleeping with a girl. Some would just fake it just to be in a women's jail.
So, wow. All right. So in Arizona, what you're born with is where you go.
Well,
so a female trans prisoner, trans who cut them off, would be with the men still?
Yeah.
Is that, would they go in the women in the UK or would they stay with the men?
So I met 1, 2, 3, 4 transgenders and they still had their manly bits.
And they were allowed in the women's?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because Sarah Jane Baker, who we've interviewed, who's a trans prisoner, was in with the men.
She cut hers off.
Her balls off in jail. Flushing down the toilet.
Oh,
yeah.
Strong that one. Yeah.
But
so Zena, my trans friend, melted plastic from like pop bottles and stuff and made them into sex toys. Is that how that happened? So
the stories I heard, and I'm actually genuinely being honest, was they would cut, you know, like the blue cell when you get arrested, the prison pillows, you get them in send unless you buy your own pillow, which,
the plastic ones,
yeah, so they'd cut that out and I think they'd use whiteners and fill it up and tie it up and use it as a thing, or toothbrush holders. Yeah,
see that one.
Yeah,
one of my female co-defendants in Arizona said that the prison would get raped, especially if they were like sex offenders and stuff. But they put socks inside of socks. That's how they did it.
Sock inside of sock inside of sock.
Oh, okay. No, I don't know.
Anything like that? No.
No. Well, Arizona jail sounds considerably worse.
Oh yeah, I couldn't imagine being in a jail abroad. Oh, I think that is terrifying. It's like boot camp over here. If I'm honest, like the hardest bit is missing your families.
That's what I'm thinking.
The hardest bit in jail is missing your family. I've had some of the best memories ever and they've not been high and sober. And I've been sober. So, yeah.
What other fun memories have you got from there?
Just some of the people that I've met, obviously. Meeting Kate Middleton.
So how did that come about then?
So basically, because I'd done this course, so she has something to do with, I don't know if you've ever heard of Forward Trust. So they are part of this course that we do, and she has something to do with that, basically. She has an interest in the women and rehabilitation and stuff like that. Apparently she'd been to the prison before, and I got approached by some woman. They said, we're doing a documentary, like, would you like to do it? Like, recovery, the counselors have like put you forward. So I'm like, yeah, why not? Like, and then like I was thinking about it, and I was like, do I want to do a documentary? And then anyway, and then she come to me, she's like, you still up for this thing? And I was like, yeah. She goes, here's a t-shirt. Then you need to be up at like visits hall at whatever time. And then at this point, I was working in the staff mess outside the staff cafe. I was doing my rottles. And this guy, well, we'd overheard this guy tell an officer that Kate Middleton was coming to the prison. So I was like, oh my God. And I was like, oh, that was it. I was like, so obviously they wasn't allowed to tell any of us. I wasn't even supposed to know. So obviously, yeah, I've gone back and told my mate. She's gone around telling the whole jail, and the officers are like, no, she's not coming here. She ain't coming here. Like, they didn't even know. It was that hush hush. But yeah, I sat and had like, I think I sat with her for about 20 minutes altogether. There was two other prisoners, but I was the only one that was recorded and put on the media and stuff like that. Like, she put it on YouTube. Well, she didn't personally,
what was she
sorry.
Asking?
She just kind of asked a little bit about our story. Sort of how it come, and I think the clip, it just says, you know, and I said jail was the best thing that ever happened to me, and she was like, why does everyone say that? She said, everyone says that I speak to, and
I'm tempted to go to jail now.
Well, you know, it's I'm do you know what, I miss it. I don't miss it, if that makes sense. I miss, like, it's hard to explain it without sounding weird, because I miss my family. I miss the no responsibility, no none of that. But then obviously I would never want to go back. Mm-mm. Ever. Like, I'd miss my family more. But yeah, it's because it's easy-ish in a weird way.
So she struck you as a sincere person,
oh,
Kate.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely beautiful, inside and out. Like, yeah, she just had such a beautiful aura about her.
Is she beautiful in real life?
Yeah, stunning. Yeah. Absolutely stunning.
She's got gorgeous hair.
I know, yeah. She's just so, I don't know, you could imagine, like, Princess Diana, like, that just, like, literally must have, like, sent her to him or something, like, because it's like, she just comes across like she's that same kind of person.
I had no idea she did this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And she was comfortable.
Yeah, she just sat there. I said I was really nervous. I made her laugh as she put her hand on my leg. I was like, I'm never washing my jeans. Like, yeah, she goes, don't be silly, it was fine. Like, she made me feel comfortable. Yeah, it's just literally, yeah, like I said, the only way to describe her is beautiful, absolutely inside and out.
The future queen.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did you get gate fever?
No. Do you know what? It was just overwhelming, if I'm honest. I was glad to get out, because lockdown, the last year I was in lockdown for 12 months, and that was the hardest bit of my sentence. That made me, and I'm, do you know what, in a weird way, I'm glad it happened, because it made me never, ever want to go back.
Did you have many cases?
Mm-hmm. Not really. One officer died. Bless her, one officer died, and then we had a couple on our wing, but it was all right. We was lucky. And the worst thing was, it was an officer, and he was one of the most kindest officer's wife you could ever imagine. I found out my mum had is terminally ill with cancer just before we got October. We got locked down in the March, didn't we? And every time he saw me, how's mum, like, so they all knew what was going on, and literally, and it was like, why did it have to be your wife? Like, you didn't deserve that, you know. And it's sad, you could think, oh, because I thought so many other officers that could have died, but it was just sad it was him. You don't get like many genuine sincere ones in there.
Was there many riots when lockdown was performed?
Couldn't lock down.
People kicking off.
Yeah. I was talking to riots, actually. One of my good friends, they got up on the roof in Send.
What?
Her and a couple of her mates, they climbed up on the roof and refused to get down. And then they said, there's like this porter cabin thing. So they climbed up on it, but obviously they're not allowed to come out. Then officers aren't allowed to touch you or anything like that, I think, because it's a threat if you fall and die, then it becomes reliable on the prison. But yeah, she said by like 1 a.m, they got cold and needed a wee and that, and they just come down. I was like, What did you do it for?
Was your partner able to visit you? Because she'd been released before you, hadn't she?
So yeah, so I just started my rottles. She got released in October. I started my rottles in October.
Sorry, what is a rottles?
So where you're allowed to work outside the jail and go home. So we get to go home once a fortnight for the day, and you get to stay at home 4 nights, 5 days, every 28 days. And you can go to work and get paid for it. A prison take, like, I think it was 40% of your wages or something, but I couldn't care. I wanted to come out and have my phone and talk to my family every day, obviously, with what was going on with my mum. Like, it couldn't have come at a better time. The prison was supportive. They actually give me an extra home visit for 6 weeks, for one day a week, but I wasn't allowed to go anywhere but my mum's, which was great. I didn't want to go anywhere but my mum's, you know, obviously it was a real tough time. So I got to speak to her, I got to FaceTime her, and then obviously lockdown, then we used to get 10 minutes a day phone call to begin with. So I got to ring my dying mum, my partner, my brother that's like literally supported me the whole way through it, you know, my best friend that supported me, you know, your dad, they don't live together. It was a madness. It was absolute madness. Yeah, but
you survived.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah, it's getting depressing now. We'll move on.
Yeah. What year were you a free person then?
The 26th of February 2021, day before my birthday. Feel? Amazing.
So last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was great. It was overwhelming. Again, it was mad. I come out to a lockdown still. It was a bit surreal. It was.
Were we still in lockdown?
Yeah, we're still in lockdown. Yeah, 21 February was.
Yes, because it was April we came out, wasn't it?
Yeah. I started work 2 weeks after being out. My old regional manager, we stayed in contact. He ended up inside himself.
What for?
For fraud, and he. So I was writing to him. And then we was writing to each other in jail. And then he got out a few years before me. And he was like, Fran, I promise you, like, when you get out, I don't know what level it'll be at, but I'll have a job for you, like, if you want one. And he contacted my friend a couple of weeks before I got out. And he was like, look, I got a job. And then I was like, Andy, like, how long, like, I wanted to have a couple of months out. And he was like, I need to fill it soon. I was like, look, give me 2 weeks.
Mm. And what's that doing?
Just a sales advisor in a motor parts factory.
He's not still up to his fraud business.
No, God, no. Yeah. No. He shit his pants. He didn't like jail, yeah. No.
How does your partner feel about you telling your story?
Do you know what? Like, she's proud of me, but she doesn't, and she's really supportive, but she doesn't like to hear about it too much because for her, jail was jail and it wasn't a great experience.
Some people want to put it behind
them. Yeah, exactly. So she doesn't, she understands why I still do it, because I've done stuff on Meridian News. I've done a couple of interviews with someone called The View magazine and stuff when I got out. So she gets it that my jobs were always helping people in jail, and that's what I want to try and carry on doing. So she understands it, but she doesn't like too much.
So who approached you for the first TV interview?
So it started off, I come out and I set up a Facebook page like about prison, and then my mate was like, you need to do YouTube. He's like, call it Birds Doing Bed or something. Like, he goes, there's no women.
Can we use that title?
And
I've got a better one than that.
I didn't even think about how crude it sounded at first. So I thought, I'm not down for making videos, you know, I'm not confident or anything about, like, so anyway, ended up hating Facebook. All the old, like, people coming out the woodwork wanting to meet up, so I shut it all down, set up a Twitter account. I called it Birds the Bird. Didn't really think about how, like, sort of rude it sounded. And I put up a tweet. Literally, I think I had about 30 followers or something. And I don't have a lot now, but I put up a tweet about, I've been home 4 weeks today. Been working for the last two. Life's pretty good. And everyone was, like, retweeting it. You know, I got 300 and something, like, likes. Again, it's not a lot, but it was a lot in that moment. And then I got people started following me, and it's all, like, prison related. And then The View magazine reached out and said, would you like to do a little article in our magazine? And it's about women and justice in the prison system and stuff like that. It's all about that. And I was like, yeah. And then they asked me to do, like, this photo shoot thing. And I was like, I don't take photos, but I was like, you know what, get out of your comfort zone. So I'd done a little thing that went up in the Somerset House in London. They were, like, auctioning pictures. And then the iNews saw something about me and then wanted to do an interview with me. So the View magazine contacted me saying the iNews want to do this. So I'd done that. And then the Meridian, ITV Meridian News, saw the article that I'd done on the iNews and contacted the View and then was like, Fran, like, do you want to do this? So I'd done all of that since coming out.
Bit of a celebrity.
Yeah, well, yeah, I came at Kate the News, yeah, so.
Did you get recognised?
No.
So the activism is phenomenal then. So you said you got a Facebook page for that, because we can link that to this video.
So I've shut the Facebook one down, but I've got the Twitter, I've got Instagram,
What links do you want us to include with this?
So there's a Twitter one, please, YouTube I've set up now.
What's your Insta?
It's Birds Doing. That's really, because I didn't even realise that that's what it logged Birds as the doing. Name. I think I followed you last night on there, actually.
Got you.
Yeah. So that's brilliant. That one. And then the YouTube is just Francesca Fattore.
And we skipped the story of someone pulling the gun on you?
Yeah.
Oh, robbery. Yeah. God, this was back. I remember meeting this guy and he wanted quite a bit. And anyway, he's passed me the money and I've looked at it and I was like, oh, this is fake. Like, I had the thing in my hand and he's like, this is fake. And I was like, and he was like, just, oh, I had given him the thing. I can't remember exactly how it was, but because he tried to take it. So he took the thing out of my hand. He leant in. Now, the next thing you know, I turned around and there was a guy had come from around the side of my car and he put a gun in my face and he was like, just give me the thing. So I was like, oh, do you know what? Like, just give it to him. Like, it's not worth it. I had no idea if it was real, if it was fake, like if I was about to get my brains blown out. And I gave it to him. But then he started like leaning in the car, trying to take my phones and stuff. So I was like, get off me. And I'll never forget. It was like, obviously, like, I was in fear. But then this guy with the guns come round the other side of my car. And I'd picked up a TV for my brother, for my nephew, for his son. I'd picked it up. It was like his Christmas present or his birthday present. I can't remember. But it just made me switch. And literally, I just remember like flicking the car into reverse mode, literally just swinging the car around, like, mate, he's rolled across the floor. And I just, and then, you know, just, I remember swinging the car to the side so it shut my door and I just drove off and he literally just got away with what he would have had. But yeah, like, just
well done.
Mad things. Yeah. Yeah, but if it hadn't been for my nephew's present, I would have just probably ended up losing everything I had on me, my phones, any jewellery, everything. But it's like that adrenaline rush come in and I was like, you ain't taking that. Like, you're not taking it. Like, it's crazy.
I would have done the same.
Yeah. Like, do what you want to me. When you, I don't know, you get defensive, don't you, over like...
Should have reversed and run.
Yeah, I know. I wish I had. And it was broad daylight in a car park.
Yeah.
It's just like, and then that, and that, you know... I rung up my missus at the time then, and that's sort of going back like over 10 years ago. And I think, oh, you know, I'm glad I'm out of it. Because if that was 10 years ago, people were just kicking off people's doors now. Yeah. And you hear the stories and it's like, I wouldn't want to be in that world.
What do you say to the young people watching this who might be tempted to get in the mix or might be in the mix?
Just get out. Like, literally get out, because it's so different as well. When I was in it back in the day, it was safe. You know, if you really think that women, the money that we was driving around with, the amount of drugs, you know, wearing it, all right, 10 grand might not be a lot to people, but, you know, nearly a 10 grand Rolex on my, we couldn't do that now. We, you know, it's more and more dangerous. People are getting stabbed for nothing. So you can't, it's just not worth it. Like, there is so much more out there. Like, you can make anything of yourself if you want to. You just got to believe in yourself.
Did you keep any of the items from proceeds of crime?
No, I've got nothing. Absolutely nothing. Everything's gone.
He's got a couple sunglasses. That's
about
it.
Yeah, no.
That's what I mean. You don't come out of jail and have anything.
I've got nothing.
Yeah.
And that's what I said. I'd rather come out to no money than dirty money. Like, I want to start afresh when I get out. That was my plan. And I didn't want to have anything that was from the past that I didn't work my ass off for.
Wow.
So let us know in the comments what you thought about this video. All of Fran's links will be in the description box, as are Jen's. It's been very interesting.
Definitely.
You know, to get the female perspective of prison. And if there are any females watching these videos who've had experiences, we are trying to get more women on the channel. So please, please reach out to us, and you know, we would love to get more women on. So yeah, huge thank you, Fran. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Knock myself out with this.
No, I'll take it. Just leave it. It's lovely to meet you.
Cheers. Yeah,
that's
thank you. Thank you, Fran. Excellent.
This podcast is sponsored by Gadfly Press. We are proud to announce the publication of The Girl Gambler, a young woman's story of her escape from gambling addiction. The story of a young girl's entrapment in gambling addiction, the true advert for problem gambling and how it controlled her every movement, every thought, and almost took her life. How the guilt and shame that go hand in hand with addiction stopped her from reaching out for help for 8 years, as she didn't feel it was okay for a young female to be a problem gambler. How she believed it was a male-dominated problem, and how eventually she did find the tools that enabled her to become free of her addiction.
Available worldwide on Amazon, link in the description box below this video. Thank you for supporting our sponsor.
Here at Boomer and Jen, we offer a wide range of organic or recycled clothing. We all know our planet is important. We only have this one. So it's vital that we all work together to slow down and reverse the changes to the environment. Whilst we all know that big industry are having a significant effect on pollution, here at Boomer and Jen, we believe that if we all make small changes, we can do our part. Fast fashion causes detrimental effects to the planet. Not only is nearly 20% of global wastewater produced by the fast fashion industry, but there is a considerable amount of fast fashion ending up in landfill. So let's move away from fast fashion items that are only worn once or twice and start wearing extremely comfortable, durable and environmentally friendly clothing and ethical jewellery. Boomer and Jen was founded in a quiet town in Devon in 2018. It has now gone from strength to strength as the world is becoming more aware of the current climate situation, helping our customers to buy sustainable, quality clothing. All of our products are fair trade and registered with the Global Organic Textiles Standard Association. Check us out on organiccottonclothing.co.uk.